Previously on Jay and Mitchell's The OC Podcast.
Then you hear Julie off screen, and she says, "Nurse, we're going to need some lunch, please." She says please in a way that sounds mean.
Yes.
Which is crazy.
It's a very aggressive please.
Julie's such a Karen.
Hey, here's my ID.
Dad, those eyebrows are out of control.
They're a sign of power.
Well, then you must be the most powerful man in the world.
Brace yourself, son. It's genetics.
It's time for Jay and Mitchell's The OC Podcast.
All right, everybody, get in here. Gather in. Gather around. Circle up. It's Jay and Mitchell's The OC Podcast. We're still going. Episode 9. My name is Jay. I am the Jay of Jay and Mitchell's The OC Podcast. The other half of the equation is my best friend, Mitchell Hardage.
That's me. Glad to be in this huddle.
He's got a really good strategy of how we can win this game. We are I said we are gathered here today.
Oh, that's what they should say in every football huddle. Huddle up. We are gathered here today to beat the other
team.
Whoa,
coach. is somebody getting married?
That's the only time they say we are gathered here today, isn't it?
I guess so. What do they say for funerals? Dearly beloved.
Dearly beloved.
No. I don't know.
Wait, why not dearly beloved? Is that a wedding thing too?
I think that's a marriage thing too.
Like weddings get all the good starters.
Yeah.
Funerals.
Funeral. All right. For my funeral, I want whoever is doing the ceremony to go, "All right, guys, look.
Get a load of this."
I don't know if you heard or not, but Jay died.
He's right over there.
Don't look at him. That was one of his requests.
Yes, we are gathered here today to discuss The OC, episode 109, The Heights.
The Heights, Epi 9.
Interesting title for this one, The Heights.
Can I tell you, I went on a, right from the jump, my brain went on a weird little journey when I first read The Heights, was the name of this episode. And this is why Mitchell has been my best friend forever, because I go on tangents sometimes, and most people will check out, but I know Mitchell will be right there with me. My first thought was, The Heights is the name of Lin-Manuel Miranda's first musical, pre-Hamilton, but it's not, because I Googled Lin-Manuel Miranda, The Heights. It's actually called In the Heights.
Well,
but if I hadn't gone on this little Google crusade, I wouldn't have found out. The first thing that pops up when you type in Lin-Manuel Miranda's The Heights is Lin-Manuel Miranda's Height. So,
which we're curious about.
We're going to play a game that is going to be a new weekly segment on this show.
How tall is Lin-Manuel?
Nothing to do with the OC. How tall is Lin-Manuel Miranda?
We're going to play it every week.
Every week.
So I guess a height and then you say yes or no?
Yes.
And we play it every week until you say yes.
No.
Wait, does he have fluctuating height?
Maybe. That's why we got to play it every week.
Interesting.
I can just tell you what is. I'll check every week to make sure it's still the same.
Okay, good. Well, for this week, I'm going to just go with the national average and assume that Lin-Manuel is 5'9".
Ding, ding, wow. Ding, 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 ding.
First try. That's
nailed
a good place
it.
To start. Yeah.
All right. And that's been this week's segment of How Tall is Lin-Manuel Miranda?
Check back next week. Where he might be a different height.
We'll see.
We'll see. So, how are you feeling about this episode in general? 109 The Heights.
I feel like we are on a really nice a little run of like really good episodes.
I completely agree.
This one so much.
Yep, this was great. I feel like all the actors are really like settled into their characters at this point, and they're able to do a lot with them. And I also feel like the writing has kind of reached a new height, if I may.
A new heights.
Because there is just so much good like chemistry between characters in this episode. There's like really clever segues between scenes in this episode.
Oh,
and
my God.
There's good stuff all around.
One of my favorite characters comes back.
Yeah, I know who you're referring to.
Donnie. Luke. Donnie's back,
yeah.
Y'all.
Donnie. He signed up. He's a exchange student at Harbor.
At the carnival, he's really good at the shooting games. He gets all
And like Luke walks by and like ducks behind a trash can when he sees him. No, I know who you're referring to, and we will get to that immediately, because on the Previously Odd, like the first thing they show is a lot of Anna clips.
Oh yeah.
Just to remind us.
Did you notice who said this is like OC, like I don't want to say at its best, but it's like how we talked about the Tijuana episode is like a seminal episode that you think about all the time. But this is like, it's just this really good episode where there's not like one huge, well, they're kind of at the end, there's a pretty big moment, but it's essentially just like a really strong episode of the show where, mm-hmm. you know, there's not like, it's not a holiday episode or, you know, some kind of crazy thing happens that changes everything from here on out. It's just like this really like, it's what I love about this show.
It's like, it's almost like a plotless episode. Like, cause there's not like a big, like, I think last week you referred to like the crystal egg episode, like the auction episode, which is a fun episode for sure. But there's a lot of characters being motivated and pushed in a direction because of like what's happening with the plot. And that's not really going on in this episode. A lot of what's going down in this episode is just like them going to school, like first day of school, and just like dealing with all of that and classes. And then like there is like the Sandy Kirsten story like kind of ramps up in a really interesting way in this one, which we'll get into as well. But yeah, I agree. It's one of those more character driven episodes like we got the last episode. And I think we'll come to find a pattern that those are like our favorite episodes because they mm-hmm. it just gives our characters room to interact with each other, which is really all we want in this show. So yeah, we got a lot of Anna clips, assuming she's going to show up again. Otherwise, why would they be showing us her?
Real quick. Well, she was in the previous episode on the, she was
in one, yeah, one episode, I think.
She was on the Previously On in the previous episode. That's how much we're going into this show.
Oh, right, right, right. Yep. You're right.
But who says Previously On the OC? They get, you know, they have all the actors say Previously on the OC. I didn't look into it, but I have an idea of who I think this was. It didn't sound like one of the, like, main characters.
Okay.
Did you pick up on that at all?
I didn't. I'm not sure at all who said Previously On.
I think it might have been Holly, which I was like,
really?
Oh, they gave Holly a Previously On. It sounded
really
like
nice.
Her.
I mean, that would be very kind of them to get. She's had several speaking lines. She's been kind of a MacGuffin of sorts. She's kind of mm-hmm. like the reason that like a lot of stuff happens between Marissa and Luke, especially. That would be cool if they gave Holly the Previously On, but
well,
not sure.
Because to me, I was like, whose voice was that? I don't think it was Marissa's. And then as I'm thinking that, there's the scene that we have talked about where it's her and Luke in front of the fish tank, and yeah. she's like, Marissa's not coming to Tijuana. And it, to me, it sounded like the same voice. So I was like, okay. Oh shit, they gave Holly a, which I don't think, well, she does have one scene in this episode, but it was just interesting that that's, how do you, I don't know.
I
how
think
do you think they
Marlon
picked who
won.
Did the, oh man. Previously on the OC. Hey, Luke, high five.
Previously on the OC. That's, there's Marlon, yeah.
I can't feel my leg.
He just shouts everything, everywhere he is. That's cool. No, I'm down for anybody who has a speaking, anybody who's like called in multiple episodes, you know? Like, I don't want to hear previously on from Donnie or Gabrielle, but I'm totally cool. Yeah, Holly should have one. I think the Noopsies should have one.
Give the Noopsies one. Yeah, for sure. Give, oh man.
Marlene.
I know Caleb Nichols gets some, like.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, there's like 90 later. Episodes of the show. They're going to have to go through some cast members.
That would be so much fun if that was just like, you know, you rap for an episode, and then they're just like, they call you back to like a sound booth, and they're just like, all right, so we're just having everybody do this, everybody with speaking lines, so just give us a few previously on the OC. I would be like, yay!
This is my why legacy I did this will show. Live forever!
Yeah, that's cool. So then, yeah, so we get clips of Anna in the previously on. We also get a lot of Rachel. Is this Rachel? Is that
I'm Rachel.
I'm Rachel. So reminding us who Rachel is, because otherwise we may have forgotten. She's pretty new, and she's no Kiki, but we'll see. And then I like that it ended with Ryan talking to Dr. Kim, where he just goes, "Give me a shot," and then it like cuts to the opener. It's fantastic.
5'9" Lin-Manuel Miranda is not throwing away his shot.
That's right. I hope he comes back often in this episode. So we open on a bunch of B-roll of a bunch of like, it was like a bunch of seals on a rock. You remember that?
I liked that.
I like that too. I like that they have a lot, because a lot of this, at least the Kirsten Sandy plot, revolves around the Balboa Heights, which is like a preserved wetlands that's
the
nearby.
Yeah,
and so a lot of the B-roll is like nature, and there's like, you know, birds and stuff, and so I feel like they're already alluding to that a little bit with the shot of like a ton of seals just like chilling on this rock by the ocean. Very cool. So then we cut to the Cohen's kitchen. It's breakfast, as it always is. We're with Seth.
It's a happy breakfast.
It's a good
not
breakfast.
Like last episode's somber breakfast.
No, remember at the end of last episode, we got a really happy, I feel like, well deserved ending, and so we're picking that wave back up right here on the Cohen's kitchen breakfast with Seth and Kirsten. Kirsten's, you know, talking to Seth. She's like, first day of school, you nervous? And Seth, like, not talking to her. He's like, I'm trying to convey everything with a look, right? and then Kirsten's just like, you look so cute. Cool? You look dope. You look rad. She's like trying to figure out like what the appropriate term, but she's kind of poking Seth a little bit when she does that. He's like, Mom, stop. And then Sandy walks in. And
which Kirsten isn't. Yeah. A go-to for humor usually, but I thought it was really funny when she was like, you look so cute, handsome, dope, rad, you look rad.
I actually like the scenes with like her and Seth, like their back and forth. I think it might be like my favorite, like whenever they're like having this kind of banter like they're having in this scene. It's adorable. So Sandy enters. He's you know, in his board shorts with his wet hair. He's been surfing. He says that he cut surfing short because he wanted to see the boys off on their first day of school, which I'm like,
of course he
can did. You be any better of a dad? cut surfing short to see the boys off to school.
First of all, he's a dad that surfs, yeah, but he's not a dad that prioritizes surfing over seeing his sons off to school. Are they junior year?
Good question. They have to be entering junior year, I would think.
I think because they're driving.
Yeah.
So
to say they're sophomores would be, I would be like that. They're no. They're way too old to be sophomores.
I want to say junior.
I want to say junior also. We'll see. Definitely not senior though, because senior year, season 3, which would mean. Mm-hmm. What is season 2? Shit, maybe they are sophomore.
Oh, maybe.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
Jesus, we're dropping so far in the OC podcast rankings. Not knowing what year they're going.
That just can't be, though.
In our defense, all these actors are in like their early 20s.
Yeah, they're in their like mid-20s. Give me a break. And they're dealing with some heavy adult shit all the time.
Yeah.
So, okay. Kirsten tells Sandy, doesn't Seth look rad? And then Sandy says, he does look rad. Mad props, son. Just killing him. Just killing Seth with this grown up.
Sandy knows how to embarrass Seth. And he usually just does it. He doesn't do it like in front of other people, which I think is like the cutest part about the whole thing. It's like he just does it because he knows that it annoys his son. He would never do it to like embarrass his kid in front of other people.
Right.
It's just this like, this is for me and you, and I know you hate that I'm doing this, but I'm doing this.
It's one of my few pleasures as a father. So Ryan enters and Ryan is able to convey everything in a look. And I feel like Seth mentioning that at the beginning was kind of like maybe Adam Brody's idea of just being like this guy, like Ryan never talks. He just like looks at somebody and they understand him. Meanwhile, I'm over here gabbing away.
Mm-hmm.
And, so, you know, they're like, Ryan, are you, like, how you feeling about the first day of school? You can tell Ryan's a little nervous, but of course, he just shoots him a glance and they figure it out.
He's shooting glances and chugging orange juice.
Yeah, so much orange juice is consumed in these opening minutes. We have a match cut on the juice pour. So, like, Ryan's going to pour his juice, and then we match cut to Marissa pouring her orange juice.
Can we come up with a term for this? Because the OC does it a lot, I think, where it's like either a visual thing of like, he's pouring orange juice, cut to a scene where she's pouring orange juice, or one character says like, well, you should, what did they say? Cut to another scene where it's like, he said this, and it's like,
they're finishing.
It's like a puzzle piece. I'm just trying to think if there's like a term we can use. The only thing I thought of was, because how we were saying, it feels like Josh Schwartz really enjoys doing this kind of editing. So the only thing I could think of was like Schwartzing.
Schwartzing. It's something that they're
Schwartzing from one to the other.
They also do it a lot on Archer. Do you ever watch Archer?
Yeah, a little bit.
They would do that a lot where they would have one character like start a sentence and then it would pick up the next scene with a different character finishing the sentence. But like what they're saying is like in a different context, but they're saying the same thing. The juice
pour. Did Josh Schwartz create Archer?
No. No, he did not.
Damn it.
But so I don't know who we lend credit to for this technique. It was probably somebody like D.W. Griffith, who was like a big racist, but also like.
Damn it.
Did a lot for modern cinema, unfortunately. So the juice pour is called a match cut, like in the editing world. That's where you have one action happening and then you match cut it with the same action happening like elsewhere. But I'm not sure if you still call it that when it's dialogue that's matching. Anyway, we'll call it a match cut for now. We'll workshop it. Maybe we'll come up with a... I like Schwartzing. We can call it a Schwartz.
Okay. It happens later in this episode too. Like, they do it a few times, so
I just feel like if we use the term Schwartzing, you know, that can be kind of loaded because this guy created the show and he's got his stamp all over it, right? And so mm-hmm. it's like, is this Schwartzing or is something else Schwartzing? You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I want to call it Schwartzing.
Let's call it Schwartzing. Yes. We're going with Schwartzing, guys.
All right.
So we go to, we're in Jimmy's apartment and with Marissa and Summer pouring juice. Marissa says that she's not going to school today on the first day of school.
Which is what she did in the Tijuana episode, too, is like, I'm not going.
Nah, she just, I'm just not going to go. She doesn't do anything.
If there's any kind of like, any sort of, you know, like adversity or anything that like uncomfortable, she's just like, I'm not going.
It's the Jimmy Cooper way to handle things.
That's true.
You know, because of Luke, because of Tijuana, because of her dad stealing a bunch of money from everybody else's dads. I don't really blame her for not wanting to go to school today. Like,
no, it's been a rough summer for her.
Gonna suck for her. Especially, you know how this town is with everybody gossiping all the time. Mm. Summer tries to like boost her spirits a little by saying there's no such thing as bad publicity, which is a term that you say, you know, about like a celebrity or a movie or something that you're trying to promote. I don't know if that's necessarily applicable to a high school girl, but you know, she's trying. Summer's trying.
She's doing her best, man. It's got to be tough to be best friends with Marissa Cooper.
Yeah.
It's a lot of like, you have to like reassure her of a lot of stuff of like, no, you're great.
You're fine. No, nobody's going to talk shit about you.
Everyone's totally going to forget about the 8 thing that's happened to you so far in the show.
Just during this one summer. Jimmy enters and he has burnt the shit out of some toast.
Cooper figured out another thing he can ruin.
Yep.
He can ruin French toast.
I wrote down, can he do anything right? He can't even make toast.
I like that Summer called him out too, because he was like, so new oven, haven't quite figured out how to make French toast in it yet. And Summer's like, maybe don't put it in the oven, which very true.
Yeah.
You don't put French toast in the oven.
I think it's obvious that also like, all ovens work the same. Like, you set it to the temperature you want to cook something at. It preheats. It beeps at you. You put the thing in. Like, how hard is it to figure out how an oven works, Jimmy? I guess if you've never used one, pretty hard.
Yeah.
But bless him, he's trying.
This oven asks you riddles throughout the whole cooking process. And depending on how well you do, that's how well your food turns out.
My temperature in degrees is neither 100 nor 93.
And Jimmy calls like, Kirsten. Oh. He's like, can you come help me with my oven?
She's like, I'll be right over. Jimmy says, he's like, I'm sorry. You know what? I'm going to go buy a cookbook today. Got a wide open sketch. He's like in his jammies. He's like, I don't really have anything to do. I'm going to go buy a cookbook. And I'm like, just go to allrecipes.com. Oh, wait, it's 2003. And people still go to the bookstore and buy books.
Jimmy, I'm remembering now, I think he's only in 2 scenes and he's wearing very snazzy pajamas in both scenes.
He's got some nice pajamas, like matching top and bottom. The button-up kind.
Yes.
That you see on like It's a Wonderful Life or something.
Yeah, it looks like he's doing a stage play where he has to wear pajamas.
He's Ebenezer Scrooge. All he's missing
he's
is like
a
little
cap.
Yeah, the candle and the little cap. So here we get another Schwartzing where we cut.
Now we're Schwartzing, baby.
Yeah, so Jimmy says, you know, like Marissa has all these reservations about going to school, and Jimmy's like, well, maybe this year will be different. And then we'd Schwartz match cut over to Kirsten saying the exact same line. Maybe this year will be different. We're back in the Coen's kitchen. So this is fun little like back and forth. There's music going over. It's like the fun, jaunty music going over it the whole
like,
time.
The pace of this whole thing was, I really enjoyed it. It was very, again, very like different from the way the last episode started, where it was like everyone was, you know, nervous that Marissa was going to die. Everything was kind of like, you guys got to eat. Nobody wants to eat. This one is just like, boom, boom, first day of school. Boom, I made French toast, but it, not really because I was really bad at it. Boom, boom, boom. It's like all, it's very quick. I liked the pace a lot.
Yeah, and there's a lot of sequences within this episode that I really dug the pacing of. So, they're all getting ready in the kitchen. Talk about maybe this year will be different. Seth mentions something like, oh, so the water polo team won't pee in my shoes this year or something.
And like you're gonna wanna store that one because it might come up later.
We'll see. And I thought it was interesting. Like, how did you feel about like Seth talking about getting bullied, and Sandy just kind of like, meh, it's like doesn't really say anything about it.
Well, there's definitely one more instance that we're going to talk about, but it's like, I think it's like how we've been talking about when you watch a show that aired 17 years ago, there's certain things that they joke about in a way that we don't really joke about or, you know, really speak about as lightly as they might have. And yeah, like bullying, that's like a reoccurring thing, is just like, Seth has been bullied by the water polo team like his whole life. And it's just like, yeah, but that's something funny about him. When really it's like, no, like that's fucked up that they've been like picking on him.
Yeah.
Like forever. And he's kind of okay with, it's just like something that he's just accepted as like something that's going to happen.
Right. Yeah. The whole like, you know, he's assuming like the nerd role and then the jocks are the bullies and then, yeah, it just seems like a like an everyday, like, just that's life sort of thing, where, yeah, as if the show was made today, you know, like, that would be, I feel like Sandy Coen in 2020 would talk to Seth about that, and he'd be like, you know, he'd like, try to resolve that issue. But in this instance, it's kind of a non-issue. It's just kind of like, hey, we're having too much fun to open that can of worms this morning at breakfast.
we don't gotta have time. Go. Everything's moving real quick in these scenes.
But yeah, I just thought that was worth noting. Ryan apparently has a teacher with a mole.
That was interesting because they were like, Ryan's got Dr. Schmidt. Or Mr. Schmidt for chemistry, and Kirsten and Sandy both look at each other as if they both know who that is.
Yeah.
And Ryan's like, is that a bad thing? And then Seth is like, say hi to his mole for me. And it's just like, why do Sandy and Kirsten both know about this teacher? What does this mole look like?
Maybe Seth had him in a previous year or something, and they had a parent-teacher conference, and they were just like, wow, that is an award-winning mole. But also, like, it's just a mole.
Yeah, that says nothing about his teaching style.
Yeah, like, yeah, I was going to be like, I was like, oh, he must be a really tough professor or whatever. It's like, nope, just got a mole on his face.
Yep.
It might not even be on his face. We don't know.
I hope it's on his face. Where else would...
Like, well, it's on his ass, and he shows it to you the first day of class. I'm like, okay, that's what you should have led with this teacher.
That's also, why is he still a teacher?
He's got tenure. Then Ryan, we get out of this scene with Ryan going, we're doomed. And then, you know, just fun high school stuff, just silly old fun, not that serious. I love this show when it's not heavy.
Well, it does and it's get even heavy. Like the idea of, you know, like high school being so important when you're of age to go to high school. And like, I like looking back on it, it was just like, yeah, I treated high school like it was way more important than it really was, like in the grand scheme of my life, you know. Yeah. And to be like, I'm doomed. And that's kind of Ryan's attitude this whole first episode, is just like, just trying to like figure out his way around high school, and like, it's so important that he like fits in or finds extracurricular activities.
Yeah.
Which at the time, yeah, it is. But then afterwards, like looking back on it, you're just like, it's so insignificant overall. Like,
yeah,
you gotta graduate it more or less. But
everybody's like emphasizing the pressure to do well, especially on Ryan. Mm-hmm. Well, one, they're like, if you screw up, then you know they'll take you away from us, and so he's got kind of like that hovering over him the whole time. But then
I guess
also,
I also, when I was going to high school, I didn't have a record, and I wasn't worried that if I did something wrong that I'd go to, you know, juvie.
Right.
So
yeah.
I guess that's where me and him are different.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's because you got away with it. You got away with stealing a car. So then we cut to, our opening credit sequence, and then come back, and we are at Harbor, the school. We're outside. It's the morning. It's before the first class starts, and Seth and
There's a song playing that my first thought was that it was a Foster the People song, because it sounded like that one Foster the People song.
The Pumped Up Kicks?
Yeah. And I was like, when did that band form, and when did that song come out? I had a lot. So I did some investigating. Foster the People didn't form until 2008, which is also when Pumped Up Kicks came out. Like, they immediately were like, we're a band. Here's a song. Give us Grammys. Like, it was interesting. But so the band that was, and then the song that is playing in the background starts off like a Foster the People song, and it kind of changes a little bit. But the band that does that song is called The 88, which I have heard and you have heard.
Yeah,
and anyone that's watched Community has heard, because it's the theme. They do the theme song for Community.
That's where I've heard them before. That's great. Yeah. Yeah. We were just watching Community. We've been putting it on to go to sleep too, which may not
great
be the
theme song.
Great theme song. Fantastic theme song. But just last night, Ashley was asking me, she was like, did they just make this song for this show? And I was like, I don't think so. I think it's like a band, and I think it's like a full song, but they just like picked it up for the show. But that's really cool. I'm gonna check them out, because I really love that song.
The way that they kind of edited the song for the title sequence for Community is different than if you just listen to the whole song start to finish.
Sure.
It's still pretty good, but they like really conciced it in a way for the theme that's works really well. And they did recently, they did like what a lot of shows are doing during the quarantine, of like doing a live like read through over Zoom.
Did you watch that?
A script. I did watch it, and I really enjoyed it. And the guy from the 88 was on the Zoom, and he did the theme song with like an acoustic guitar. Yeah. And you saw like all the other like tiles of like the cast. Their mics weren't on, but they're all like singing along with, you could tell that they like also really liked it. It was really nice. I liked it a lot.
I loved that. That was a ton of fun. And it was Pascal, the guy who plays Mandalorian.
Yeah, Pedro Pascal.
Pedro Pascal was the Walter Goggins role in that, and he was so great, man. It was, that was a treat. So, got the 88 going. Seth and Ryan rolling up on campus. Seth says, I wrote this line down. We've perfected the master race, and they all go here. So this is kind of like one of the only times it's brought up how like privileged and white everybody in this community is. Like, it's obvious when you watch the show, but this is Seth kind of like, this is one of the only times he like draws attention to this.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was weird that he said master race. I know he's like being facetious there, but I'm also just like, whoa, like,
yeah,
what are you talking about?
I think this is another, yeah, another joke that we don't make now. I mean,
Seth had a couple in this episode that didn't sit well, didn't age well. One's coming up. Well, one comes in later at the carnival. You might know what I'm talking about.
We're both on that one.
Okay, cool. Okay. But yeah, I thought that was a weird one. But yeah, he's just pointing out, like, look at all these rich white people here at this school. And Ryan's just like, hey, we are also white.
Yeah, I wonder though, like, because they do a lot of, like, Seth does a lot of joking in regards to, like, him being Jewish.
Yeah.
And there's just, I mean, there's that whole, like, you know, blonde hair, blue eyed, white master race kind of thing. And we're like, there are a lot of, like, you know, like Luke and a lot of the other, like, water polo players are like blonde haired dudes with blue eyes. And so I think that's where he was going. I think it was more of a, like, master Aryan. Race in regards to, yeah, Aryan in regards to, like, his Jewish heritage kind of joke.
That, that plays a little better then, if that's the case.
I'm not trying to justify it, because again, it's, but I do wonder, like, yeah, like, if when we're watching this in 2003, or, you know, whenever we watched it a few years later, like, was that a funny line, or was that a line that we're just like, kind of throw it away and don't think about it too much? Like,
yeah, I don't know. Maybe the more I think about it, the more I'm like, if Seth's Jewish, and he says, like, the master race goes to school here, and he's referring to all these blonde haired, blue eyed water polo players, and they're bullying him. Like, that's loaded, man. Like, you know what I mean?
No, he's very often referring to himself as, like, this outsider that doesn't, you know, belong there. He's like kind of a minority amongst these people.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, and he's, yeah. And it's usually just, like, we talked about in the, when Summer's like, you're Jewish? And we talked about, like, how we kind of got a vibe that, like, maybe Josh Schwartz growing up in that area felt that way.
I'm sure he did, yeah.
Yeah.
So they keep walking along, and Seth gets shoved by a giant. This guy was, like, 8 feet tall. And it was, like, built like a brick shit house. Like, he just, yeah,
this is the first time that we see, like, water polo players in their, like, element based, like, in school. Like, we've seen Luke and some of his buddies partying at, like, Holly's beach house,
right?
But this is the first time that they're wearing, like, the, like, maroon harbor school colors, and he just gets fucking, like, shoulder, like, tackled by this dude.
And I was
like, oh yeah, they do pick on him.
Yeah. I was surprised, you know, I know Ryan's trying to be on his best behavior here, but I'm surprised he didn't, like, buck up to the guy or anything, you know? Like, Ryan protects his boy.
What if Ryan punched the guy and got expelled? He was at Harbor for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And then gets expelled.
He just knocks out this guy. He's like, really? He's like, push my friend.
Dr. Kim, I tried. This place just isn't for me.
Yep. Go back to, I'm going to go to public school, I guess, where they encourage fighting. Seth drops a, when the guy bumps into Seth, he drops a, don't get your Speedos in a bunch line. I was like, you can do better than that, man. Come on. If you've been bullied your whole life, you can do better than that.
Yeah.
But this is just kind of the natural order of things in high school, I guess. In Harbor. So then we cut to Marissa and Summer. They walk past some, I would call them mean girls. And then one of them says, there goes that dead girl. Like,
yeah. Like, one of them says that. Another one goes, I heard she died down there. So they both made, like, jokes about how she's dead. And she just,
they're looking at
very,
her.
Very alive, like, walked past them. Like, that's such a weird thing to, that's the joke you make. Like, yeah.
It's also weird for like Marissa to be offended by that, because she's just like, that's the dumbest thing you could have said. Like, you could have said, like, her dad steals money from all the other dads. Like, that would have hurt.
Her boyfriend cheats on her.
Yeah, to say that I'm dead is just wildly inaccurate. Here I am. But,
She should have fucking stuck her hand through those girls.
Yeah.
The way a dead, like a ghost would.
Oh, my God. But Summer has Marissa's back hardcore in this first day of school. And she just snaps on those girls.
It. Yeah, she's diffusing everybody. Anybody that's like bucking towards Marissa, Summer, who's like 2 feet shorter than Marissa, like gets in the way and fucking tells them off. It's great. Oh, yeah.
She jumps on him, man. And then the core four spot each other and they meet up by the stairs.
I think Summer goes, oh, great.
Yeah. But that's the bickering that we've come to love between Summer and Seth.
Yeah.
And so Summer and Seth kind of like go off, talk to each other, and then Luke and Marissa have a little moment together where, Marissa's just like, oh, this sucks, right? Like, oh, Marty, like, having to deal with mean girls and shit. And I thought it was surprising that Ryan goes, let's get out of here. Like, he's just like, he offers up like a first day of school, you know, like, he barely got in. He's on thin ice, like, constantly. And he's just like, yeah, fuck it. Let's bail. Let's bail on the first day of school.
Marissa doesn't want to be there. Yeah. To her, that sounds like the best idea. But then she's like, no, I can't.
Yeah. She talks him out of it.
I got carnival committee meeting afterwards.
Right, right.
This carnival is so important to they have like
the kickoff carnival,
so many
dude.
Meetings about it.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of logistics to figure out, like cotton candy or funnel cake.
Oh, we'll get to that.
Personally,
I think both of them made the wrong choice, because I think funnel cake's better than cotton candy.
I will say in my lifetime, I've probably eaten like 5 times more funnel cake than cotton candy. I'm not a cotton candy guy. But that's not for us to decide.
It looks nice. That's all it's got going for it.
But once you start eating it, it's sticky. It's just sugar that dissolves in your mouth. Funnel cake's got some substance, but I could understand an argument for cotton candy over funnel cake, just because if you eat like a whole thing of funnel cake with like the powdered sugar on top, and then you ride the Tilt-A-Whirl, you're going to have a lot more vomit on your hands at this kickoff carnival. Potentially.
We'll get to it.
Yeah, I feel like we should be on the committee.
I feel like we could talk everyone out of all of the standard, because all the carnival food is bad for,
dude. Yeah,
like devouring and then going on rides where you spin around a bunch.
Yeah, the last time we went to like, I think it was like the state fair or whatever. This was years ago, but I like realized, I was just like, this whole thing exists to make me throw up. I was like, it's hot. There's no shade. All the food is like deep fried and like sugary, and all the rides are like janky ass, spin you around real fast. And I'm like all they want to do is make me barf. That's the whole purpose of the carnival.
That's how they get their kicks, get their rocks off at the carnival. You're like, can I just have an apple? And they're like, yeah, but we're going to dunk it in caramel and sprinkle a bunch of Butterfinger bits all over it. Here you go. Now go spin around on the spinny spinner. You're like, oh, God damn it.
You do it.
You will do it.
Why else would you come to a carnival? So Ryan's like,
now here's a goldfish in a bag that's gonna die on your ride home. I don't want this.
Deal with it. It's on your hands now. fun. Carnivals are fun, guys. So
that's the thing I miss most about being in quarantine.
Yeah.
Can't go to any carnivals.
Boo. So Ryan's like, well, okay, you don't want to ditch school now. What about later? Let's hang out later. And Marissa's like, you know, she's got the kickoff carnival, whatever. She's got to stay at school till 5. Ryan's like, that's cool. Like, just hang out later, whatever. We'll figure it out.
Ryan's been real, playing it real loose in this scene. He's basically like, hey, I just want to hang out.
Yeah, man.
So
he's doing it right. Summer re-enters the scene, grabs Marissa's like, let's go. Then Luke shows up. And he's looking all mopey and stuff, and he just wants to talk with Marissa.
There are so many scenes in, it started last episode when Ryan and Marissa are like trying to sneak out of the hospital and they open the door and Luke is there. And then there's like 3 different times in this episode where he does it, where like, he just gives this look like, hey, it's me. I know you don't want to see me, but it's me. It's like this very like...
Can we talk?
Yeah.
I think and if Marissa's we talk,
just like, fucking get fun. Away. And he's like, can we just like talk about stuff?
Yeah.
She's like, no, fuck you. Go away. He's like, oh, but can we talk?
He has a hard time accepting like defeat. Because he's like a privileged piece of shit.
Yeah, he's been given the world his whole life. Nobody's told him no.
Yeah.
I assume he's the captain of the water polo team. We find out later that he's the captain of the soccer team.
Like, I know.
He gets to fucking do whatever he wants. And now he got caught fucking up and he has to like kind of be humble and he's not good at it.
No, he's having a hard time with this one. So again, Summer steps in and like tells Luke to fuck off. Way to go, Summer. I feel like if you ever played like a video game where it's like an escort mission where you like, mm-hmm. you're the main character and you've got to like get this other like helpless character from point A to point B and you're like fighting off like zombies or whatever the whole time.
Yeah,
like I felt like
move,
that
like,
was
way
Summer
slower than you do.
Yeah,
just like, god damn it, come on.
Yeah, I felt like Summer was doing an escort mission with Marissa, and she's just like all these high schoolers are like trying to like get at Marissa, and she's having to back off, like throw fire in their face or whatever. Like
fight the mean girls, fight the ex-boyfriend, fight her mom. That's the boss battle.
That's
we don't
the,
see that.
That's
there.
The big boss battle. I'd play that game. Somebody make
Julie
that
Cooper
game.
Wasn't in this episode either.
At
she
all.
She kind of like comes yeah. and goes.
She does. She's not like in the opening title sequence. You notice.
Not
Wait,
yet.
Is she? Not yet. Not yet. She will be. But
her
yeah.
and Summer, I think, come in at the same time on the when
yes.
they're like, look, we gotta redo these titles. These two characters are important.
I guess originally they thought Jimmy was gonna get more screen time, but then they realized like, oh, like Julie's a much better villain, I guess.
Look, all the test screenings, everyone's booing Jimmy anytime he's on screen.
You didn't do him many favors. You made him kind of the most like despicable, not despicable. That's a little too harsh, but
just like disappointing.
Disappointing. He's the most disappointing character.
Him burning that French toast, you're just like, come on, man. Bro. He does have a good, he has a, the other scene that he's in, he has a good moment where he, like, sticks up for Marissa.
I agree, and I'm going to preemptively go ahead and throw his name in the running for OC MVP for that scene
okay.
alone. And also because they're like, come on, the guy needs a win.
I'll make a note of it.
Okay. So we cut then to the Cohen's house with Kirsten and Sandy. Kirsty. That's what their
Kirstie.
Mashup name is.
We're in their Kirsty Allen Cohen.
We're Kirstie in their bedroom. Kirstie Alley. Kirstie Alley's in Sandy and Kirsten's bedroom. And Kirsten's like, new suit, new scent. New girlfriend. I'm like, damn, that's pretty accusatory. She's just jumping right on the whole Rachel potential office romance there with Sandy.
This whole thing with like them like making out heavy.
Yeah.
And then like talking about Rachel and then like Sandy like saying something and then her pulling back. And then him being like, no, well, he like talking his way back into her, making out more. It's like, when you think of like shows that have like a mom and dad character, whenever they like kiss, it's just like, oh yeah, mom and dad kissing. Sandy and Kirsten makeout scenes are like pretty intense. Like he like kisses like her chest at one point in this scene. Like they are, these two fuck a lot.
Yeah, they are. Their sex life did not go away when they had a child. I mean,
when they had a child 16 years ago.
Yeah, 16 years ago. God knows what they were like in college when they were living in that van. God.
That fucking mail truck was probably rocking.
That when that mail truck's a rocking, which it always is, because these two are
nonstop.
These two are madly attracted to each other. But I like that. I like it feels like a real like marriage, and it feels like a real healthy marriage. But it's like believable the way that they kind of engage with each other.
Yeah, they definitely, like, those two actors are just, like, they're not dialing it in. It's not just like, I love you, mwah. It's
right.
Like, the kids right. aren't home.
Kid. Yeah, yeah, and Kirsten even says that, like, mornings used to be our time, you know? Like, yeah.
When?
I guess with, like...
16 years ago?
Well, I guess, like, when, like, yeah, whenever, like, Seth would go to school and maybe, like, Sandy worked at the public defender's office and he didn't have to be there super early. I don't know, but it sounded
they're
like
they're kind of just come and go as you want. I don't think he had like specific office hours.
Yeah. They're just, yeah, but they, you could, yeah, they bone in the mornings, guys. That's what we're getting at. So it's interesting. Cause yeah, as soon as she says, she's like, mornings used to be our time. What happened? And then it like cue the cell phone ringing, you know? It's just like, oh, fucking life happened and business. And that's kind of like, that's kind of the theme of the episode. It's just like all the things that get in the way of one character being with the other character they want to be with. Like mm-hmm. Ryan and Marissa and Sandy and Kirsten. And to an extent, Seth and Summer, there's like all these like obstacles and priorities and obligations getting in the way of them just like being with each other.
Well, we're going to talk about the Seth Summer Anna thing a little bit. It's something that goes on for the next, I don't know how many episodes, but it kind of starts in this episode and well,
yeah, you know. It's a love triangle that the setup is honestly like reminds me of a teen movie or something.
Yeah.
Like a She's All That or like a 10 Things I Hate About You, where there's like this kind of like, here's the plan and we're going to do that, you know, and then like people fall for each other. So we go back to the school.
Oh, wait. But just real before, like last episode, we talked a lot about just like cell phones and what cell phones were like in 2003. And I remember us talking about like, cell phone ringtones
right.
back then, and like this scene was such a perfect example of that, where it was like her phone's ringing because Caleb, her dad, is calling her with business, and it's like bleep 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 bleep, and then Rachel's calling Sandy, and it's like it's so fucking annoying, and they're both like trying to get to their phones.
Yeah, it's like the shrillest, most ear piercing like sine waves you can think of. It's like, I'm like, we've come so far. Obviously there's custom ringtones now, but just like the default ringtones, they were like, hey, what about instead of like giving somebody like a heart attack when the phone rings, we make it kind of pleasant, like a little marumba playing or
a
something.
Little marumba.
like a fun little tone. Like, why did it take us so long to figure that out?
If Apple was like, for the iPhone, the default ring is just someone going, ah!
Steve Jobs is like, yeah, I like that.
It'll make you answer your phone fucking really fast.
That is true.
You want to hear that.
That's the point. All right, so let's jump to the next scene. We're at school. We're in the hallway. Seth and Anna's back.
Anna's back.
Anna's back. Welcome back. Tahiti.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back from Tahiti.
So, yeah, I think the last time we saw Anna was episode... Was it the Cotillion?
Cotillion, which
episode
was...
Episode like 3 or 4?
3 or 4. I think it was 4.
2?
4.
4. Okay. 4. So, this is like 5 episodes we've been without Anna. And which is why we got so much of her at the beginning of this episode, the previously on, because, oh yes, for those viewers at home who may have forgotten, she's been in the show before. Granted, it was one episode.
I want to be the person who tuned in starting episode 5 and just sees this warm, glowing, sunshine person and be like, who the fuck is this?
She wasn't in Tijuana. What's this shit?
Is she a friend or a foe?
I need to know. She's a friend because Seth greets her with a nice little hug. Big friendly hug. Then Summer enters and she is instantly rude to Anna. She's like immediately territorial of Seth, even though she's not like...
Well, because before Anna comes, like, the scene starts with Seth and Summer, like, walking down the stairs, and Seth is like, hey, you know, if you want to sit by me at lunch, I'll save you a seat. And she's like, there's nothing but empty seats around you. And then we hear, Seth Cohen? And he's like, Anna! And so, like, I guess Anna overheard their conversation, because Summer is like, we were talking. And it was like, you were like insulting him. You were just like dissing him. Is that talking? Like, what is that?
Yeah. Like, why would he want to hang out with somebody who's mean to him? Don't be mean to him. And she didn't have time to explain, like, no, that's what we do. We just kind of like bicker at each other like an old couple, and it's cute, it's fun. It's
we had a scene in a diner in a few episodes ago. It was adorable. You weren't there. You were sailing.
You were too busy sailing. But no, Anna jumps in there and she is super nice to Seth, and Seth and her just kind of click. They just kind of like instantly pick up where they left off. And
Anna is very attractive, but Seth has like no desire at all to, like, he doesn't see her as like someone to like date. He's like fixated. Anna, help me with Summer.
Yeah, he's fixated, like, on Summer, and that's
you and I are buddies, and that's, give me advice,
right? That's how we get into this whole, you know, like high school teen movie situation. Is this,
which kind of like in this scene and basically up until, we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but at the carnival is kind of where she comes out and says, like, she actually does like Seth. He just doesn't see her that, like, she's aware that he doesn't see her that way. Like, right. Up until that point, it's kind of just like Anna just seems like this sage, like, asexual, like, I'm going to help you. You're my friend.
Yeah. Like, well, and maybe this is because I have the hindsight of having watched the series. So I know that, at some point, Seth and Anna date. But I was picking up that Anna is, like, Seth comes to Anna and he's like, I'm crazy about Summer. I, like, because she just drops a little advice that's, she says, like, you know, you try too hard. You gotta girls like to be chased by guys who aren't interested in them or something. She says something like to that effect. And so Anna drops that on Seth, and Seth's like, wow, that's really good advice. Will you, like, coach me in, like, getting Summer? And I think that, like, Anna agrees to do it, but I think, like, she agrees to do it so that she can get closer with Seth,
Mm-hmm.
So that she can like help him see the error of his ways and see that, oh, he should be dating me and not Summer because like we're a better fit or whatever. I might have been reading into it too much, and they might not have been like intentionally dropping those, but I was just like picking that up from like little cues that Anna would give that she was like into Seth. Also, mm-hmm. it's just like you don't show that much interest in somebody, like if you're like a heterosexual high schooler, somebody of the opposite sex, you don't like show that much interest in like. And like they're, I don't know, like they're just like always together, and they're like always like they're like lab partners. They're like always doing everything together.
They have everything in common.
And I'm like, just like, you just met this person, and you're spending all your time with him. I'm like, you like him, right? Like you have to like this guy, right? I don't know. But yeah, so this is the beginning of it. I love that. I made a little side note when Seth's like, I don't play games, except maybe a little family Jenga, Magic the Gathering. And then the way he says, there's like a cutaway close-up of Adam Brody just going like, I love Magic the Gathering.
Love Magic the Gathering.
Love Magic the Gathering. Like,
which is something that I, like, they bring up Jenga and they bring up Magic the Gathering and... Those are two things they talk about in episodes in the future. And we see them playing Jenga at one point. We never see them play Magic the Gathering. And I'm kind of upset. Maybe they couldn't get the rights or whatever.
Oh, maybe. Maybe that... I feel like that might have just been another throwaway line from Adam Brody. See, Adam Brody's doing this thing where he's playing like the stereotypical... like nerd character, but he's bringing this sort of like cool guy stoner kind of like I guess it, yeah, it's like he's bringing a vibe to the character where he's just kind of like the way he's portraying it, it's almost like he's not like making fun of nerd culture.
He's self-aware.
Yeah,
these things are generally reserved for like nerds and outcasts. But yeah. He's just like, no, I love these things.
But because they're fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he loves the things, but he it's like he's aware that the things that he likes kind of like are typically, you know, associated with just like fucking like stereotypical high school nerd stuff that's been sort of like cultivated since like the 80s, I guess, like the idea of what a nerd is. But he's kind of bringing a new flavor to it. He's making it like a little bit cooler and and I just like, oh, I kind of appreciate what he was able to do with this role.
Absolutely.
It's pretty cool. So then we cut to Sandy's office with
this scene where it's Seth and Anna are like walking down the hallway and this whole like, will you help me with Summer? Yes, I'll help you with Summer. I noticed both of them are wearing messenger bags and like everybody in the scene is wearing messenger bags, and it was, I don't know if that's a thing anymore, but like 2003, everybody had messenger bags. Like it was such a,
yeah.
Like,
did you have a messenger bag
back in time in that moment? Like I had one. I'm 99.8% sure you had one.
Oh, I definitely had one. I had like a Dickies messenger bag, I think.
Yeah. Everybody we knew had messenger bags. Yeah. It was just like, yeah, this is what we don't wear backpacks.
we're alt. We're different. But man, like, yeah, it was such a thing, but I have to say, as a 33-year-old man, backpacks are superior in every way to a messenger bag.
Oh, absolutely.
Messenger bag, like your center of gravity's all off. It like bangs on your hip while you're walking. Like a backpack just makes so much more sense. Yeah, like it's you can carry way more stuff without really feeling it. Backpacks all the way, guys.
I think I even thought all of these things in 2003, but I was like, Yeah, but look how cool I look.
Look how cool I look.
With my black messenger bag.
I look like Seth Cohen.
Some patches on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Guy gets patches, some pins. Really make it your own. All right. So we jump to Sandy's office with Sandy and Rachel.
I'm Rachel.
That's Rachel.
I wish she kind of like Kramered every scene that she walked into.
Oh,
and just like walked into his office and went, I'm Rachel.
Rachel's here.
A crowd applause.
It's the only time you hear the studio audience. So Rachel comes in. She's asking about, like, I guess Sandy was on time to work, but he looked like a little disheveled. She was asking about his sex life, essentially.
No, because she was the one who called him when his phone was ringing and Kirsten's phone was ringing. And she was like, you sounded weird on the phone. Did you like just wake up? And he doesn't say like, no, I was about to fuck my wife and you ruined it.
Right.
He was like, no, it's just, you know, having some time with my wife.
Right. Yeah. He says it in like the most, I guess, like work appropriate way possible. But
which she, their dynamic, like she kind of is prodding him about his sex life with his wife. Yeah. Throughout this scene, and it felt weird.
I know, I agree.
Unprofessional.
Yeah, and I get that they're old, like college pals or law school pals or whatever. But I'm like, still, like you gotta. I think maybe they're just trying to like reinforce that idea that like this is how lawyers talk to each other. Like,
right.
They don't give a fuck. Like,
she's just one of the guys.
Right. But it's also, yeah, I agree. It felt weird like the whole time. And, but then she drops the, well, you're not going to get any for a while. And Sandy's like, excuse me, what are you talking about?
This,
yeah.
What she says next, she's like, how familiar are you with the Balboa wetlands? And Sandy turns into fucking Wikipedia about the Balboa
He's
wetlands.
Bill Nye, he's like, the science guy.
Home of the blue heron and the red osprey. And like he names like eight different kinds of birds and wildlife and like a bunch of different like vegetation. And he's like, and the swamp rose. Like it was like he had just done a school report about the Balboa wetlands. And he still remembered all
so
of it.
So knowledgeable. About
it was crazy
about this town that he hates,
but he loves the Balboa wetlands.
I mean, he loves the wetland. The wetlands,
it would be like Mitchell, tell me, can you name three plants that are in your backyard right now?
Grass,
one
honeysuckle. We got honeysuckle back there, and a shit ton of English ivy. Because that shit does not stop.
You passed.
Boom,
but
gotcha.
you weren't as quick with it as Sandy Cohen was just like, boom, 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 boom.
Oh, yeah. But no, he knew like all the biology and the like everything. He knew everything about it.
How big it was. Like,
yeah,
square.
I couldn't tell you how big my backyard is. Not that big. So, yeah, the Balboa Wetlands are this preserved... I think Sandy refers to it as the one of the most biologically productive like what places on Earth or something like that, like some, like crazy. So they're preserved, and then the Balboa Heights are it's like the land above the wetlands, and Rachel comes in and she drops like Sandy's like. You know, developers have been going after the heights forever, but they've like never been able to get through the Balboa Protection Society. Like they've never been able to successfully like get the Balboa Heights, right?
I just made the connection that the heights is also referring to Balboa Heights. I just assumed it was the Ferris wheel.
Oh, I had that light bulb moment when. when Ryan says that he doesn't do heights. And I was just like, heights, heights, the Balboa Heights. Oh my God, the heights. The name of this episode. They really...
Fucking bravo, OC. That's pretty cool.
They really schwartzed it on this one, yeah. So, well done. So nobody's been able... No developer has been able to get to the Balboa Heights until now. And who should be the developer to get the Balboa Heights?
The fucking devil himself.
Caleb Nichol, Kirsten's dad and owner of the Newport Group, which Kirsten works for. So,
cut to Caleb in his office with a huge chair, and he's like smoking a cigarette, and he like puts it out in his palm and like doesn't react at all to it.
He starts laughing maniacally, and then like an intern comes in to like bring him like his coffee. And then he says, like, I said no cream. And he, like, throws it in his face. And then he, like, sicks an attack dog on the intern. And he just, like, laughs while he watches the dog, like, chew the guy's leg off. Yeah. He's a bad guy. All right?
He's the worst.
If it wasn't clear. So, yes. Caleb Nichol has gotten the Balboa Heights. And Partridge... Savage and Khan, I have to remember the law firm that Sandy and Rachel work at, they are filing suit to, I guess, like prevent them from developing on that land, claiming that it is like preserved land. It's a preservation.
Well, I think they're representing the Preservation Society.
Right. Right. They asked for Sandy specifically.
It's a Partridge, Savage, Khan, Cohen, and Rachel.
And Rachel. I'm Rachel. So this is going to be a big historic lawsuit. Rachel says this is going to be taught in law schools. And then she says, so what'll it be, Sandy? Do you want to make history or do you want to have sex with your wife? Because you can only pick one. Essentially, I'm paraphrasing, but that's what she says. So Sandy's got this dilemma now. Mm-hmm. He can either take the case and go against his wife's company in court, or he can not take the case and I guess continue to have a good relationship with her. But this is Sandy Cohen we're talking about, guys.
He's going to fight for the environment. He's going to fight for the little person.
Always. Always.
You know, he's not going to let... If anything, if it was just Kirsten's company, I think he would be a little more reserved. But it's Caleb Nichol's company that Kirsten is like the number two for.
Right.
And he fucking hates Caleb Nichol.
Oh, they so hate each like, other. And yeah, that's why the Balboa Heights Society or whatever they're called requested Sandy, because they were like, we know you have a contemptuous relationship with your wife's dad. And so we felt like you like would want this case to like take him down or whatever.
Did you see, it was the most, probably one of the, I laughed a lot in this episode at different things. One of the biggest laughs was in the headlines in the paper.
Yeah.
In a few scenes.
Oh yeah.
I wrote
yeah.
it down, so I'll read it, but it's,
no, yeah,
it's very funny.
That's a good one. All right, so then we cut to class, and Marissa's in class, and she hears some mean girls talking about her.
Holly and some mean girls.
Yeah.
Holly goes, did you know that she overdosed? And they all laughed, and I was like, do you laugh about that?
Yeah, like, that's fucked up. Also, Holly, you're like responsible for her overdosing.
Yeah.
Like, you're just the worst, I believe.
Like, I heard she got drunk and peed on herself. And it's like, all right, that's kind of funny, but still kind of mean. But like,
yeah,
did you hear that she overdosed? Is like, that's something that you overhear like at someone's funeral.
Yeah, it's
like, it's
sad.
Weird to be like,
she like tried to commit suicide. Like, fuck you, Holly. And then we cut, that's all that scene was. Then we cut over to Ryan and Luke are in a class together. Oh boy. This is a school of like 20 people because everybody's just in class with each other.
This is a class that takes place in a boardroom or something. Like,
yeah, they're sitting at a table.
It's like one long conference table.
Yeah. It's like got a, it's got kind of a Hogwartsy vibe. It's
yeah, just like, what feels class like a, is this? Like, yeah. Mystic arts or like, what's going on?
So they just kind of stare each other down. And then we cut to Dr. Kim's office, the dean of the school. And we're with Marissa and Dr. Kim. And Marissa's there because she wants to quit social chair. And Dr. Kim is really trying to talk her out of it. I'm like, first of all, is social chair like that big of a deal?
It's an elected position, Dr. Kim said. Like, people voted for Marissa to be the social chair. So she owes it to those people who voted for her. Also, Dr. Kim's desk. Did you notice her like nameplate on the front of the desk?
No.
It just says Dr. Kim. It doesn't say like a first name.
Yeah, Dr. Karen Kim or
Dr. Teresa Kim. It just Dr. Kim.
Dr. That's Kim. It. I wish it just said DK. Come in here, you'll talk to DK.
If the students know I have a first name, they won't respect me.
Yeah. Last name's I'm only Dr. with teachers. Kim. Man, you freak a teacher out if you call them by their first name. They don't want to give you any sort of hint at what it might be.
Yeah, no leverage. I just thought it was funny. Like, she's talking to Marissa because she's like not near her desk, but as she's talking, she walks back over towards it. Yeah. It's just this shiny gold plate that says, Dr. Kim.
Dr. Kim. That's great. I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm going to look for it from now on every time we go there. So yeah, Marissa's just like, after everything that happened and all this, like, I don't think I can be social chair anymore. And Dr. Kim's like, hey, people are going to talk. Why don't you give them something good to talk about?
Let's give them something to talk about.
A little mystery. So, so Dr. Kim's like very much pro Marissa staying as social chair. I personally don't know why she cares so much. Like,
I did like the scene though, because Dr. Kim is basically like, fuck them.
Yeah, like I did like that.
Do your thing.
Yeah,
fuck those people.
Don't let them push you around. Nobody gonna push Marissa around. Yeah, she was very encouraging. It's the kind of talks you would hope that, I don't know, Jimmy would have with Marissa. Her own father.
When Marissa gets valedictorian and she has to give a speech, she's like, I want to thank my mom. No, I want to thank my dad. No. I want to thank Dr. Kim.
Dr. Kim, that's the person who's the reason I'm standing here right now. Thank you, Dr. Kim.
And I don't Jimmy know what her like, first name is, yeah. But she's like a mom to me and a dad. She's a parent.
I don't know her first name. And frankly, I don't want to know it. I like the way we have things.
It's Kim.
She's Kim Kim?
Kim Kim. Kimberly Kim.
Kimberly Kim. Yeah, so... So I know we were just talking about how high school really isn't important, but they try to impart the severity and the importance of high school. And Dr. Kim does it in this scene. She says, this is your school. This is your life. Don't walk away from this. Like, she's like very intense about it. It's like, damn, okay. So now, you know, this is why kids take high school seriously, because...
Yeah.
All the adults in their lives are just being like, this is fucking it, man. This is it.
Yeah.
High school.
The summer kickoff or the like beginning of the school kickoff carnival, that's everything.
That's fucking like, not your really. Purpose
you
for
just don't go
living.
If you don't want to. It's
yeah.
Like, no. You fucking go.
You go.
Have a good time.
Yes. Maintain the status quo.
You eat cotton candy. You eat funnel cake. You ride the spinny ride. You get a goldfish in a bag.
And you like it.
Or else, don't come home. But Dad, but don't you love me?
Well, I don't know. Who do you love more, me or Dr. Kim? Why don't you go to Dr. Kim's house?
You bring me that goldfish in a bag back home. I'll give you an answer.
So then we cut to outside at the school. And right, I love how this whole thing is just like one day at school pretty. Well, it's like 2 days, I guess. But yeah, it's just like school. Like, let's get into this school year. And Ryan's outside and he's reading a book. And Seth and Anna enter.
Do we know what book it was? I couldn't really
get it. I didn't see the title, but it was like a summer reading book. So it was like a novel, I guess. And Seth and Anna come in and announce that they've joined the literary magazine, which is called The Plank.
Because they're pirates.
Because they're pirates. That's their mascot. I was like, That was the best you guys could do. The Plank. Pirates. What is a literary connection to pirates? The treasure map?
The poop deck.
The poop deck? The plank. Easy. Plank. Done.
The hook?
The hook. God, that's so much better. Hopefully, Seth and Anna will bring a little more, I guess, sort
creativity.
Of like, yeah, to this magazine.
The crow's nest. Is that what you call the like lookout tower thing at the top of the pirate ship?
That's a cool one. Crow's nest sounds tight. I'd read that. Would you read The Plank you saw?
No.
Saw it sitting on a shelf.
The crow's nest either sounds like, yeah, the literary magazine of a high school whose mascot is a pirate, or like a bar that does like Jägermeister specials on a Wednesday.
Definitely. Like,
yeah, the crow's nest.
Come on down to the crow's nest. We haven't cleaned the bathrooms in 10 years. So Seth and Anna are like, they're already a couple at this point, I'm convinced. Like, they're doing everything together. They're doing the same extracurricular activity together. They're always together.
It's also like, Seth is really happy when he's around Anna.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, like, self-doubt or anything that he feels, like, whenever he's around Summer, like, trying to impress her.
Right.
He's just like, hey, Ryan! Hey, me and Anna, we're doing the plank!
Everything's going great.
Yeah.
And yet, I still want to be with Summer, even though I've clearly found my soulmate here in Anna.
But she doesn't, you know, she doesn't do it for him.
I guess not, man. Which is, I mean, that's, you know, it's a fool who looks for logic in the chambers of a human heart.
It's just blonde versus brunette, you know what I mean?
I guess so. So then, speaking of blondes, Marissa enters and she informs Ryan that she has to bail tonight because she's actually going to maintain her position as social chair. I guess before she was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna blow that off and we can go hang out, but now, like, after that little pep talk with Dr. Kim, she's like, you know what, I'm gonna stay on as social chair. So Ryan's kind of bummed, but I would say he understands. He's like, again, being very cool about everything. So Marissa's like, how about we reschedule and hang out at the kickoff carnival that I'm now planning? And she says, I'll save you a Ferris wheel ride. And Ryan says, I don't do heights. And this is when it clicked for me. I was like, Ryan doesn't do heights. Balboa Heights. The Heights, the name of the episode. Brilliant.
This is our brains work different. Like, you got what was the purpose of that. My thought was, he doesn't do heights. And then two episodes ago, he says he doesn't wear hats. And then I thought, what does he have against H words?
Ooh.
And I was like, what other things could he have possibly been against that were H words? And I thought about when Kirsten, when they finally take him in and Kirsten was like, we'll get you how is your bed? Do you need a new bed? Would you like a hammock? And he's like, no hammocks. And it's just like, any H words. He's like, no. And no then, hats, heights, hammocks, hamsters, nothing.
Marissa's little sister comes over to show him her horse, China.
And
Ryan just punches it in the face.
He punches the horse!
And gives it alopecia somehow.
He punches the horse so hard that it developed a skin condition.
All its hair falls off. There was a little moment here where like Marissa exits and Ryan's just kind of there by himself looking around. And I thought this was like a really cool little moment. Like he's like looking around and he sees all like the high school kids and they're all like talking to each other, and then he sees like a couple and they're like making out or whatever in the quad, and he's just like sitting there all alone. And it's just like having gone on this journey with Ryan up until this point, like this has to be kind of like a maybe like kind of a surreal moment for him. He's just like, wow, I can't believe I'm like here with all these people. And obviously like when you see the couple making out, you make the connection that he's thinking like, oh, I wish I was making out with Marissa. I wish that was me and Marissa. But like all the other shots of like all the other kids and stuff hanging out, it just like, I don't know. It was like a really nice moment where Ryan probably felt like he's like come so far from where he started at the beginning of the show.
He's like taking it in. I took it as like him feeling, which between this scene here and then the scene at the end of the show, it's like way more vulnerable than we see Ryan in most of the show. Like up until this point, he's got Seth, and it's basically when he's not around Seth, it's Seth that's like can't wait to hang out with Ryan again. But Seth went to go do the literary magazine,
right,
and Marissa's going to do the carnival thing, and he is just kind of by himself. And then we see a different vulnerability when we see how scared he is of heights later in the episode.
I love the way he plays.
I want to talk about for at least 45 minutes how much I enjoyed that scene.
Oh, it was amazing. All right, well, let's move on so we can get to it. So then we go to Sandy and Kirsten's bedroom. It is the next day. I think Sandy kind of sums up this scene in the line, we're just two ships passing in the bedroom, because they are both, they want to spend time with each other, it seems, but they are both just like so busy right now that they like don't even really have time. Because like Kirsten says, you know, I guess Sandy was working late last night, and like got in late and she was already asleep, and so they just like they just haven't had any time to connect.
Right. And he also, she's like, we have a meeting. My dad's calling like an emergency meeting.
Yeah.
She doesn't know about the Balboa Heights case.
The lawsuit, Sandy, yes.
The lawsuit. Sandy does, and he doesn't tell her.
Doesn't tell her. He has an opportunity. I guess he's had an opportunity for a little while now, because he found out about it yesterday.
Yeah, but if she was asleep when he came home, what if he woke her up? Wake up.
Kirsten, we're suing you.
I'm sorry, honey.
But you're right. Yeah, no, this is an uncharacteristic misstep on Sandy Cohen's part, the guy who always values honesty and talking through things.
I wonder if we hold him in too high of regard. Not that he's not deserving of it, but like when he does fuck up, because every character in the show fucks up.
Yeah.
He does it the least, but like when he does, we're just like, we're like so crushed. It's like our hero. We find out that like Mark McGuire has been our hero our whole life, and then we find out that he did steroids or whatever. Like,
oh,
it's
yeah.
just this thing where like, how could he do that? Why? Why wouldn't he tell her?
He's kind of the moral center of this show. He's like the moral compass. And I mean, not to discredit any of the other characters, because there's a lot of good here in the characters of this show, but I think that they really, you know, take time to show the flaws of everybody. Mm-hmm. And Sandy, for whatever reason, they don't really show too many of his flaws until, you know, I would say within the last, like, ever since the stuff kind of started with Rachel, he's kind of, like, done some questionable things. But yeah, it does suck.
Because I know we're both also, like, watching ahead, because mm-hmm. It's really easy to do with the show, of just, like, binging, like, 7 or 8 episodes at a time. But yeah. Have you gotten to, oh, and I'm having trouble remembering her name now, but his love, the love of his life before Kirsten?
Rebecca. Yeah.
That's like the big part where I'm just like, what the fuck is Sandy doing? And it like really made me question everything I've believed in with some of the stuff that he does. And we'll get to it.
Yeah.
But that's like season 3.
I think it's season 2 she comes in.
Okay.
But you're right. I think they may have set him up to be a little too good to be true, so that when he does show that he is in fact human and he's capable of making mistakes, you are kind of crushed, because you're just like, oh, that's like Jesus making a mistake or something, you know. it's almost unbelievable that it could happen, but I appreciate that they make him a flawed character.
Yeah,
because they should all be flawed. And the fact that it takes a while to get to Sandy kind of screwing up here and there, I think that just makes it even more like devastating when he does screw up.
But yeah, dude, it's crushing. Yeah. Jay and Mitchell's The OC Podcast is still very much we're still very much Sandy Cohen fans.
Oh yeah, that'll never change.
Forever and ever.
We'll take him, warts and all. So then we cut to the Cohen's kitchen with Ryan reading. He's still like so behind already. It's day 2, man. This kid.
There was apparently, and he says it in the last scene where we find him reading, where he talks to Seth and he was like, so apparently there was summer reading. And Seth was like, really? And he was like, yeah. And he was like, oh yeah, sorry about that. Which I feel like that was something that when he got accepted into Harbor in the last episode.
Yeah.
Dr. Kim,
yeah,
first name unknown, should have been like, hey, by the way, make sure you read Madame Bovary and whatever else was on the summer reading list.
Right. I had that thought too. I'm like, why is it Seth's responsibility to tell Ryan what the summer reading is?
Yeah, he didn't know. They don't have the same classes. I don't think they have any classes together.
Yeah, Ryan just got accepted like in the last episode. Like, how would he have known to do the summer? I don't know. Anyway, he's trying to catch up.
Like, he's really making an attempt to like get caught up.
Yes.
And also in the you know, just moments ago when we're like, what the fuck, Sandy? Why didn't you tell Kirsten? He kind of, as he so often will do anytime that we question if he's a good person or not, this is a scene where he's like fucking a good dad to Ryan.
Yeah, he's like, still a good dad. I think that I don't really recall any times where he is a bad dad. He's always a good dad. He screws up in his relationship with Kirsten a few times, but mm-hmm. I think he's a good dad kind of throughout consistently.
There's a scene later in this episode that I got a little teary eyed.
Aw, yeah.
I'll talk about it when it gets to there. But
I mean, this was a great scene too, where you know Ryan's there. He's reading, and Sandy comes in. Ryan's like, I'm already behind. It's only the second day, and then Sandy's like, you're one of the smartest kids they got. It's just like, god damn, it's really like pumping him up. It's so great.
Your test scores.
Yeah. And then this is where Ryan's like, you know, everybody has a thing. I think he's referring to like extracurriculars, like Seth and are doing literary mag, and Marissa's the social chair. And Sandy's like, well, you got Seth. And Ryan's like, well, Seth has his women. And so he's like, Seth Cohen?
Sandy is befuddled.
He cannot believe
this statement
that any girls would be interested in his son.
Not even Seth has his girlfriend.
Yeah.
Seth has his women.
Multiple. Yeah. So, I mean, that is...
Which is just two, but even still.
That's, yeah, two more than he had last year.
Right.
So then Seth enters. And Ryan's trying to figure out, like, oh, what can I do? What can I do? And then Seth suggests that he tries soccer. And Ryan's like, yeah, I used to play soccer when I was a little kid. Boom, there you go. Ryan's going to try for a soccer team.
Yeah.
That's going to be his thing now, I guess. So,
which will, you know, and there's scenes of him playing soccer. And I know it's not, I was trying to think, like, what's the perfect sport for Ryan? And
boxing.
Boxing or, and this would be like if the show took place in like Minnesota or something, but Ryan is like a hockey player, just being like a goon.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Fucking just fighting motherfuckers. Mm-hmm. That would be so cool.
I don't think Harbor has a hockey team. It's too violent.
Soccer and water polo, and I think that's it. Probably baseball, but...
I could see Ryan on the basketball court to like throwing bows, you know?
Maybe. Oh, yeah. He's definitely in the paint. He's definitely fighting for rebounds, throwing elbows.
If only we were a little bit taller. And a baller. So then we cut to Jimmy's apartment with Jimmy and Marissa eating cereal this time because Jimmy sucks at cooking. And I guess he didn't get that cookbook.
And didn't get a cookbook.
I guess he didn't make that effort. He's again wearing his very nice pajamas. And, you know, Jim, he's apologizing because Marissa had to sleep on the couch, you know, because he wasn't planning on her living with him. So he didn't like...
It appears that like his apartment, and we never see the upstairs, but it almost seems like it's kind of a loft situation where it's like...
There is an upstairs.
What's that?
There is an upstairs, right? We've seen the stairs. We haven't been up there.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like there's like two bedrooms upstairs or anything. So yeah, she sleeps on the couch downstairs.
Which my thought was like, let her sleep in your bed, dude. Like, you sleep on the couch. It's your daughter. And she's a princess. But whatever. Jimmy sucks. So Marissa slept on the couch. And then ding dong. Doorbell. Who's there? Jimmy goes to answer it. Oh, it's the phone guy. Real exciting stuff, right? Nope.
So excited about getting a phone installed.
I know. Phone line. Landlines. Oh my God. This show's so old. Nope. It's not the phone guy. It's fucking Luke.
And given that look. That look that I referred to earlier was just like, hey, it's me.
I done messed up.
Don't slam the door in my face.
Luke's there because he wants to talk to Marissa, of course. And Jimmy, this is where Jimmy gets a nod for MVP.
Jimmy fucking nails this scene. Yeah. As much as he fucked French Toast up in his earlier scene,
yeah,
he does that to the opposite extent in this scene. Because he's not like, Get the fuck out of here. You stay the fuck away from my daughter. Right. But he's basically just like, not going to let you talk to her.
Yeah.
He's like,
she told me what happened and you're not coming in. And Luke's like, well, what can I do? What can I do, Mr. Cooper?
He's like, Mr. Cooper, if anybody knows about being in the doghouse,
and
Jimmy's like, you don't want to finish that sentence.
Don't you dare. Luke's really struggling.
And I really like that. Here.
Yeah, I did too. Luke's like, what can I do? And Jimmy's like, you can leave. It's like the best thing you could do right now.
Like, before you go, though, do you know how to make French toast?
Yeah.
Can you write it? Write it down. Write it down for me.
I know it's not an oven, but like maybe like a frying pan or a microwave situation. So yeah, he gets rid of Luke. And Marissa's grateful, you know. She's like, wow,
yeah,
thanks, Dad.
Yeah, she does go thanks in like a very sincere way that I really liked.
Yeah, that was a good moment for them. Then we cut to the school. We're in the hallway with Ryan and Marissa. Marissa tells Ryan that she might be able to leave her meeting early because all we're doing, apparently, is deciding whether or not we're going to have cotton candy or funnel cake at this kickoff carnival. To which Ryan replies, oh, cotton candy, easy, no brainer. And then Marissa's like, oh, yeah, same. So
yeah,
looks like we don't have to have that meeting, guys.
I said, is cotton candy and funnel cakes the new cheese sticks versus ding dongs?
Well, they both agree. Yeah, they both had a clear idea of which was superior, whereas cheese sticks or ding dongs, boy, they were really in the weeds on that one.
That was a 20-minute scene, it felt like.
So Ryan tells Marissa, I've actually got soccer practice after school. And so Marissa's like, oh, cool. Well, you know, I've got that meeting. So let's meet up after we get out of our extracurricular activities. And Ryan's like, yeah, sure. So then we cut to class and Anna is there. She is seated and Seth enters and asks if the seat next to Anna is taken. And she says it is now. And so
it's the last seat in the whole classroom.
Yeah, they overbooked this class in this private school.
I did not. That that was something that I thought about far too much during this scene.
No, like, I thought it's justifiable because that is like really irresponsible that would happen.
Someone has to stand?
Yeah.
They're
the
paying
whole semester?
Who knows how many thousands of dollars to go to this school, right, and they don't have a seat?
They got to pull up a stool when they like put their books like where? Next to the sink? It's like a lab class. So then Summer enters and she is the last one in. There's no chair for her. And Seth offers
She does give a look, a very convincing look that I fell for. Where you can tell, like, she looks around, she sees there's nowhere to sit, and she's just like,
shit.
Like, slumped shoulders. It's a Marissa move.
The shrug. Oh,
Yeah.
So Seth offers up his seat to Summer. She sits down. Then Seth's standing up.
Yeah. When Seth is like, you can sit here, Summer. Yeah. Anna gives him this look like, are you fucking kidding, you fucking idiot?
What have I been teaching you? You play hard to get. This is not hard to get. You're a pushover, Cohen.
Now you have to stand.
Yeah. Oh, but no, he doesn't, because then Anna offers to like share her chair with Seth, which is uncomfortable. I'm like, you're going to do this all semester?
Which is uncomfortable, but if you're a dude,
oh yeah,
at the age of 16, and a girl's like, "You can share this seat with me," you don't care about comfort. You're just like, "Oh, this is the best."
Yeah, and again,
also,
he's
basically like sandwiched in between the like two girls that are fighting for him, essentially.
Uh-huh. And yet he's still so oblivious. It's crazy. He still doesn't, I guess, pick up on the fact that Anna's into him, dude. Like, you're sharing a seat with her. Come on.
Yeah.
So Seth asks
That Anna does is he takes it as
this is part of the plan.
Part of the plan.
Right. This is where the high school, the teen movie comes in, because mm-hmm. that's how these things are prefaced. It's like, oh, you're going to pretend to date her so that, like I'm thinking 10 Things I Hate About You, which is just Taming of the Shrew. This is all Shakespeare, by the way.
I was going to say, this summer, Rachel Lee Cook,
yeah,
Freddie Prinze Jr., all part of the plan.
All part of the plan.
I don't want to waste my time becoming another casualty of society.
I love
it. PG-13.
I love that you went with the upbeat pop punk as opposed to like the Paula Cole like.
No, and even like Sum 41 feels a little like there was like a lot of those kind of like one hit wonder pop punk bands that that found a place in like trailers for those movies.
Oh yeah, that's how they made their money.
Even like American Hi-Fi.
Yeah, like, or like Newfound Glory.
She's just the flavor of the week.
There you go. But yeah, it feels very much like that, where it's like the setup is like, you know, Anna's gonna like coach Seth and like do stuff with Seth to make Summer like want Seth more, but what she's actually doing is like falling in love with him through doing all this stuff, and he's just like thinks it's part of the plan. So there's the disconnect. This is the beginning of the love triangle. Seth asks Anna about Tahiti, and Anna's like, it was amazing. And then Seth says to Summer, you know, like, Anna sailed to Tahiti this summer. That's why she was gone all summer. And Summer
says, it felt weird that he hadn't asked her about that until now.
Yeah, that would have been like the first thing I asked her
yeah,
about.
Yeah, Anna! Give her a hug. How was Tahiti?
It's a no-brainer. But no, he's just now getting to it after a whole day. And Summer, I mention all of that because I think what Summer says next is like one of her best lines. She says, sailing is like so not the fastest way to get anywhere. And I think that line is brilliantly written and brilliantly delivered by Rachel Bilson.
Absolutely.
Anna says, you should join the debate team with that kind of rhetoric. Like, boom. Anna just is snapping right back at Summer. She doesn't take her shit like Seth does. And so there is like instant feeling
Anna
of competition.
Seems like the only person that does clap back at Summer.
Yeah.
Whereas like Summer is kind of like the feisty one that usually like tells people off. And they're always just like,
with her.
And like Anna's just like, nope.
Yeah.
Boom. Back in your face. And then Summer doesn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And it's kind of awesome.
Yeah, kind of dumbfounds her. But it is cool. So then we cut to Sandy's office, and so the camera is with Sandy as he's like walking into the office. As he enters his office, we see Kirsten sitting in a chair in front of his desk, and she says, brought you lunch, and she like throws a sack lunch at him. And so it's clear now that Kirsten found out about the lawsuit, found out that, you know, Sandy was potentially on the case, and she's mad at him because, you know, he didn't tell her. She had to find out when she like had to like sign a deposition or something. Do you sign a deposition or do you give a deposition? Whatever. She had to deal with lawyers, lawyer stuff.
Oh, but real quick, in the scene before where this gets brought up, Sandy does mention to Rachel, like, that's my wife's company. That's a conflict of interest.
That's the thing she was signing, probably.
Yeah, because Rachel says that the Preservation Society, they waived that, which
okay.
You and I are not lawyers. Just for the record, if you guys thought you were listening to a podcast about the OC that was done by two lawyers, you're wrong.
We could get
not lawyers.
We could get Scotty in here. We could get my brother-in-law.
We know nothing of law.
Yeah, he's a lawyer now. But yeah, okay, so waive the conflict of interest. Kirsten signs the thing. She finds out, like, my husband is, like, taking me to court? So then Sandy snaps back with a, you'll be destroying one of the most biologically productive ecosystems on Earth. To which Kirsten replies, we plan to preserve 300 acres of it. And then Sandy's like, yeah, but there's still, like, all the pollution. And, like, this is, like, the cleanest source of water for our city, and you're gonna fuck that up when you like build a bunch of houses on it. And so they're battling now. It's the war,
yeah,
the war of the Coens, and it's getting heated. So Kirsten kind of storms out.
Whose side are you on?
What?
Whose side are you on?
Honestly, like Sandy's side, obviously, like he's trying to preserve an ecosystem. Like all Kirsten's doing is just like building more fucking houses in a place where they shouldn't be building houses. Whose side are you on?
I mean, Sandy's. I like a lot of times because I am so quick to be team Sandy Cohen.
Yeah.
I was like, let me hear Kirsten out. Let me hear what she's bringing to the table, because maybe I'm wrong to just so quickly, you know, write her off. And she's like, we're going to preserve 300 acres. And in my mind, I'm like, that's a lot of acres. That makes sense.
That's probably fine. No,
I'm sure that's good.
That is a lot, but I don't know, man.
But like, also, it's just this thing of like, yeah, it's like it seems like there's plenty of places to live already in the OC. Like it doesn't seem like they need more condo. I mean, it's kind of how I feel about Atlanta with all the condos going
100%.
Up. Like, how many do we need?
Right. Yeah, you're tearing down like. Well, I guess they're not really tearing down anything. I mean, they tore down the fucking batting cages. I've missed those batting cages.
They tore down the Masquerade, the place that we went to a couple times and hated every time we went, but they shouldn't have torn it down.
That's the thing about Atlanta. It's like there's not a biologically productive ecosystem here. There's not even like historic buildings here because Atlanta's burned down like 2 times already. Like, so it's like whenever they want to build somewhere, everybody's just kind of like, yeah, that's fine. We don't really have any like history.
With Atlanta, it's more though, like the more condos they build, the more expensive it is to live in Atlanta.
That's true.
So it's like the more shit they build, the further out you have to move.
Yeah, no, they're definitely pushing out people who've been here for generations, and that's gentrification, and it's like fucked up. It's also America, and that's just how fucking capitalism works. So, what are you going to do? But, yeah, I find it hard to sympathize with those who are just trying to build more fucking condos. Especially when it's on top of this, like, ecosystem that provides clean water to the city. I'm like, that should be illegal. Like how are you able to do this? But I feel like if I feel like they could have made Kirsten's case a little stronger by saying like, well, if we didn't, you know, like we want to preserve all this stuff, and if like we didn't, you know, build here, then somebody else would, and they would just destroy everything, you know, like they could have done something like that, but they didn't even do that. So yeah, I'm team Partridge, Savage, and Con on this one. So then we
PSC.
Yeah, baby.
Or K. I don't know how Con is spelled.
Con's with a K. It's like in PSK. Star Trek. Yeah. It's the Star Trek Con. You know, the bad guy. Benedict Cumberpatch. So then we cut to soccer practice. We're with Ryan. He runs up. He's on the sidelines. He goes up to the coach. Coach is like, hey, what position do you play? And Ryan's just like, I don't know, striker? I like to kick the ball.
No, he knows. He's like, striker. Also, Ryan looks like a soccer player.
He does.
Like he's got the build for it. It's
nice,
not like
haircut.
You're just. Yeah, it's believable that he's a soccer player.
Yeah, I buy it. And then the coach is like, "All right, well, we've already got a striker. Guess who it is? Luke.
It's Luke, and he's also our team captain.
Yep, your nemesis. So go up there and run sprints next to him or whatever. Do drills with him." And so Ryan's just like, fuck. Okay. So they kind of like square up.
Coach is like, you guys don't have a past, do you? And Ryan's like, no, sir.
We've never punched each other.
Multiple times.
It used to be like every episode. So yeah, Luke's there. Ryan runs up next to Luke and they're kind of like staring each other down. They're about to like do a thing, but they cut to the carnival planning meeting with Marissa just as it's wrapping up. And Marissa's the last one out of the room. And before she can get out, sweaty ass Luke enters because he is determined to talk to her.
Is there a locker room? Because it's like Luke finished practice and then immediately like, he's still wearing his cleats.
Yeah.
He's sweaty.
Yeah.
There's no, like, what the fuck, Luke?
He's got his shin guards on. So, like, man, like, I mean, Luke is just, like, he needs to just, like, lay off, man. Like, he's just showing up everywhere where Marissa is. And he's, like, determined to, like, get back together with her or whatever. I don't know. Like, he's just being a real, he's being real pushy about this. And I was not a fan.
He does the line that is used so, like, in every TV show ever. He's like, can we start over?
Yeah. God, that's the worst. That's like such like an abusive relationship person thing to do, you know, like an abuser move where you're like let's just start, let's just forget all that shit ever happened,
forget everything that's happened until now.
Yeah.
And a lot of time Marissa doesn't say like, or maybe I don't know, she doesn't, but it's like a lot of times people go like, okay,
yeah,
it's like, wait a minute, no,
no, you can't just do that. So yeah, Marissa kind of is like, fuck you, basically, when he's like, we gotta talk. And then Luke kind of,
she kind of like leads him on a little bit though, because like, does. Not leads him on, but just kind of like
entertains, you know, his,
entertains him, like lets musings. Him yeah. kind of dig himself a little deeper. And he's like, to the point where he's like crying. And
right.
then she's basically like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah. Luke's all crying. He's vulnerable. He tells her that, you know, he loves her. And the whole time Ryan is kind of like, he walks by and he spots them through the door and he's just like standing there watching them.
Ryan, who apparently did shower and change.
Yeah.
He's not in his like sweaty soccer gear.
Yeah.
So it was just like, Luke was like, as soon as practice was done, he's like, I gotta go get Marissa.
But Luke wasn't even there that long. Like, or unless Ryan's real quick with a shower and a change. He's just like, I'm going to pop in, rinse off, and throw my clothes on. But yeah, you're
see
right.
how fast Ryan showers. I bet it's real quick.
He just like runs through it.
It's like tank top, shirt, pants, done.
Let's go. So yeah, Ryan. So what Ryan sees is, it looks like Luke and Marissa kind of like making amends because Luke's crying. He's like putting his hand on Marissa's hand. And then Ryan bails and he doesn't see Marissa like kind of tell Luke to fuck off. She's like, you know, if I didn't catch you cheating on me, I would still love you too. But I did, so I don't. Okay, bye. And as Marissa's like walking out, you know, you hear the door down the hallway, like, open and close. And she kind of has, like, Ryan radar, where she's just kind of like, was that? What was that? Who was that? Because if it's
she
just
like bends, she, like, bends down and, like, touches the ground and smells it. And she's like, Ryan.
Axe body spray. Must be right. But, like, just the fact that it's, like, it's a active school where there's, like, a bunch of people. And this one, she doesn't even see, like, a silhouette of him or anything. She just sees a door closing and she's just like, oh, could that be Ryan?
My love?
It was. Maybe she does have
yeah, it does kind of almost feel like a school play or, like, some sort of thing where it's, like, you know.
I just missed him.
He was here. I know he was.
I can feel it. So then we dip to commercial and come back on the Cohen's driveway. Sandy's just getting back from a nice morning surf.
Sandy surfed twice in this episode.
He's got clear his mind.
Dude is riding those waves.
Yeah. He's got a lot going on, man. A lot of heavy shit. Gotta just take a break every once in a while.
Also, what they, you know, said in his last episode was, you know, more normal hours with this new job. So,
yeah,
he basically, like, he does have time to go surf in the morning and he's fucking taking advantage of it. Good for him.
Good for him. So Kirsten enters with the newspaper and she was like, I've been trying to keep this from my dad. But now the whole town knows that we're fighting because the headline reads, you say it.
You, I think that, okay, I wrote down, the Heights reaches new lows as hubby attorney takes on wife and father-in-law's company. What kind of news publication says hubby attorney?
Hubby attorney.
What the fuck?
It's the Huffington Post, the Hubbington Post.
This is the most reputable newspaper in all of Orange County.
I really wish the camera like tilted
up. The Heights reaches new lows. Immediately you're like, ugh. Using puns already. As hubby attorney, gugh.
I really wish that the camera tilted up and the newspaper's name was The Plank. But it was just the Harbor School newspaper. So yeah, so somebody wrote an article about this already, even though Sandy just found out about it like yesterday.
But it was Partridge, Savage, and Khan like leaked right. The story.
Oh, they leaked the story. Thanks a lot, guys.
That's what, because Kirsten was like, this is from your firm, or she said something like that.
Oh, they did the press release or whatever. Bummer. So that's not going well. Then we cut to the pool house with Seth and Ryan. And I liked that Seth was just like there to talk with Ryan. He was just like, he's like, I haven't like talked to you. Like, what's going on? Who are you? What's your life like?
Okay, so Ryan walks out of, I guess, his bathroom.
Yeah.
And Seth is there, coffee in hand, newspaper.
Yeah.
He's reading Arts and Leisure. He's not reading The Heights Reaches New Low as hubby attorney takes on a wife and father in Lost Company. But yeah, and he's just like, I haven't talked to you in a while. How's it going? How you doing?
Yeah, just checking in.
Remember that this is Seth in this scene, because a little later on, it's a stretch, but I'm gonna fight for it.
Okay.
I'll let you know. Just remember this. Remember this scene.
I will. All right. Yes. So Ryan is a bit reluctant, but he says that he saw Marissa and Luke making up, you know, in his mind. And then Seth says, you know, just talk. Why don't you just talk to Marissa? Like, I'm sure she'll tell you the truth about that. So that little seed has been planted in Ryan. Then we cut to the school hallway with Marissa and Summer. What?
We're schwartzing.
We schwartz over there? Oh, right. Summer, she says,
because we hear Summer before we even cut.
Yeah.
We hear Summer go,
don't tell
her. Do not tell him.
Yeah. Yeah. Seth is like, talk to Marissa. I'm sure she'll tell you the truth. Smash cut to Summer being like, do not tell Ryan the truth. That's true. That was a good cut. So Summer exits, Ryan enters, and Marissa's like, where were you last night? Like, we had plans to hang out after our respective things. And Ryan's like, sorry, I got slammed. What did you do after your meeting? And then Marissa's like, nothing, I just went home. And then Ryan's just like, kind of suspicious, kind of bummed, because he was
I saw you hand fucking Luke.
Yeah. They were like he like gave her every opportunity to tell him the truth.
Yeah.
And she didn't. She didn't even mention Luke. So Ryan's just kind of like, all right, see you later. You had your chance. Then we go to biology class with Seth and Summer. It's the second day of school. And they're already
frog dissection.
They're already dissecting frogs. Like, I cannot believe, like, you work up to a dissection. You got to like know what the fuck you're doing.
Yeah, but you and I went to public school. This is a private school where they have so much money for dead animals. I bet they dissect shit every
week. Yeah. Every week a new animal to dissect. The dissecting a frog is such like a classic trope, I feel like.
It was in E.T.
But yeah, exactly. But they don't even really do anything with it here. The most they do with it is that like Summer kind of like seems interested in the frog. Like, she's not like grossed out by it. She's like interested in dissecting it. And then she like sees Seth like looking at her, and she's like, oh, I've got to assume my role of like whatever the fuck That is.
This was the thing that we've been talking about with Summer, of like when, you know, she knows shit about like Madame Bovary, or she knows a like Days of Thunder reference,
yeah.
Or you assume she's going to be grossed out about dissecting a frog, and she isn't.
Right.
She's interested in it until she realizes that it's expected of her to be grossed out by it, and then she gives her catchphrase, ew.
Ew. Yeah. You know?
But she is like kind of wants to dissect a frog.
Right, you
know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why she's curious.
She feels like she has to like fill that role or whatever. Like, just be you, girl.
Yeah.
You're wonderful. So then Summer wants to be Seth's lab partner, because he has the quote hands of a surgeon. And then Anna enters and says that she is Seth's partner. And Seth's kind of confused. He's like, what? This is like a perfect opportunity for me to like be with Summer, like spend time with her and like win her over or whatever. To which Anna replies, watch and learn, Cohen. And then she's like, scalpel. And then Seth's like, scalpel. And he hands her the scalpel.
If I may, yeah. She says, scalpel.
She says scalpel? Oh, she dropped the L.
She says scalpel, not scalpel.
Scalpel.
And my first thought was, is that a Pittsburgh accent? How do people from Pittsburgh say scalpel?
Hand me a scalpel. Because
I know there is a Pittsburgh accent.
I don't think she does. She doesn't like have an accent when she says anything else, though. Does
Wait,
she?
If there's ever a scene where she has to eat an apple, yeah. I want to hear how she says apple.
What is the Pittsburgh? I'm not even familiar with the Pittsburgh.
I don't know.
Accents.
Well, okay. So scalpel.
Scalpel is the name of the instrument.
So I guess apple's not a good reference.
Right.
I don't know. She does say scalpel.
That's a mistake, I think. I can't brush that off as just like, oh, it's her accent. I'm like, no.
It might just be like a nerd cute, like, I'm going to say some words wrong.
Oh.
But look at my short haircut. And we all go, you're the best.
You know what? You can do no wrong in my eyes.
Here's your scalpel.
Here's a scalpel. It's a scalpel, guys. Teacher, you're wrong. It's a scalpel.
All the surgeons have all gotten together and decided.
So Seth says, where do we begin? And Anna looks dead ass, like looks at Summer in the eye and goes, the heart. I don't know what she was trying to do with that, but
you know what? The only thing that makes this scene better is if she winks afterwards.
A wink would have been nice, but no, she's just like, it seems as though like she and Summer are communicating to each other, we are fighting over this boy. And Seth sitting over there just like, dude, I don't know what's going on.
So oblivious. Yeah.
He's just like, I guess this is going to help me get Summer. I don't know. Oh, boy. Oh, Sethy Seth, Seth. So then we have the, yes, Partridge, Savage, and Khan. We go back to the law firm, and we're in a conference room with Sandy and Rachel. Meeting's getting out, and Sandy enters with the paper that Kirsten brought to him as he was arriving home.
Hubby attorney.
And he asks her, did you hire me for this case? Like, which was a smart assumption. Like, he just got hired. And
yeah, like last week.
Yeah, and they're throwing him on this huge case, which happens to be against his father-in-law, who he hates. Which, by the way, how public is the knowledge that Sandy and Caleb have a tumultuous relationship? Like, is that just like well known throughout the community that these two guys don't like each other?
Apparently.
It would seem that way. Yeah.
If like the news and law firms are reaching out about it.
Yeah. weird.
But you know how the OC is. Everybody knows everything about everyone.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. So Rachel says, no, we didn't even have this case before you started working here. Sandy says, you know, I can win this case. Like, he's very confident. He's like, I can win this case. But what will I lose? And then Rachel says, you know, if your marriage can't survive this, what kind of marriage is it? Damn.
First off, fuck you, Rachel.
Yeah, she's really overstepping here.
That was not just like she's just one of the guys. We know what we know about her. And like, she's been pretty flirty.
Oh, yeah.
With Sandy from the jump. And then for her to like do that, that felt like she overstepped her bounds a little bit.
Oh, big time. And yeah, just kind of fucked up and icky. It feels like, you know, she's trying to say, you know, like, your marriage with Kirsten ain't nothing. And then she's like trying to like sneak in there or something. I'm not sure entirely her motivations, but she's definitely being super rude right now. Not appreciated. So then we cut to soccer practice with Marissa and Luke on the sidelines, just kind of chatting it up, laughing. Like, I guess they're friends now.
I don't want to come off as a star school athlete, because I'm not. But in middle school, I was on the baseball team.
Mm-hmm.
So 7th and 8th grade, I was on the baseball team. And nobody was allowed to watch. Like,
practice?
If a girl came up and watched practice, the coach would be like, get the fuck out of here.
Oh.
So it was kind of weird that, like, Marissa's there to watch. Like, she's not, like, the, you know, like, equipment manager or anything. She's just there.
She's the social chair.
She's the social chair, but that doesn't grant her, I don't know how Harbor does it. Apparently, they just let people watch soccer practice.
Yeah, I'm not sure this coach is a good coach. He has them literally just like doing the same drill.
This coach gave my favorite line in the whole show.
Really? Was it when?
This whole episode.
Was it in the
scene?
I'll
let you know when it's coming up.
Okay. So I thought it was really weird that, so like Marissa and Luke are like, you know, being nice to each other. They're reminiscing a little bit. And Luke was like, oh, I can't believe, you know, I cried in front of you. I think the last time I cried was at the end of My Girl when Macaulay Culkin died. And then Marissa's just kind of like, oh, yeah, from all the bee stings. And then they like laugh about it. Like, what the fuck? I'm like, that's like the saddest movie ever. And they're like sitting over here like, oh, yeah, when all the bees stung him and he died.
Oh, yeah, from the bee stings. That's a reference. I've never seen My Girl, but I know if anyone brings up My Girl, they're probably going to bring up bee stings and Macaulay Culkin dying from bee stings. And to this point, I've always been, nobody's ever been like, you remember that scene from My Girl? And then they talk about any other scene.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like The Sixth Sense, which Misha Barton was in.
She was in My Girl?
No, she was in The Sixth Sense.
Oh, yeah, it's the vomit.
She was the vomit girl.
Vomit girl.
I guess aside from that scene, all anybody talks about is, you know, Bruce Willis was dead the whole time. It's like once... like the big thing happens, that's all the movie becomes. And yeah, My Girl, unfortunately, I mean, it's a fantastic movie. Dan Aykroyd's in it. But yeah, I can't think of any other scenes either. But I haven't seen it since I was a kid, but it's a great movie. I highly recommend. But you know how it ends, and it is a bummer. It's a hard one.
Mm.
Not one I would laugh about. Like Marissa and Luke are here. So Ryan is on the field. He, of course, sees everything. So he spots, you know, Marissa and Luke kind of chumming it up. And they go to run drills. And it's, you know, Ryan kind of like jumps in line so that he can go up against
Ryan
Luke.
Ryan goes to the front of the line. And yeah. He's like, I got this.
Yeah. And so, you know, I guess Luke takes off with the ball and Ryan's trying to defend or whatever. And Ryan just like slide tackles, spikes up, like just fucking floor, like Luke goes down. And it looks like he...
Well, he goes down, but before he goes up, like Ryan doesn't punch Luke in this episode.
Yeah.
But this is him punching. Like Luke goes like 5 feet in the air.
Oh, yeah. It's a...
And then falls
It's a nasty tackle.
On his ankle, apparently.
Yeah.
Like Ryan slide tackles the fuck out of him. It's awesome.
Yeah. And Marissa's, she's just like... She's just like confused, like, why would you do that, Ryan? I'm like, oh, are you fucking kidding me, Marissa?
Because of My Girl. Because of the bee sting scene in My Girl. That's why.
Yeah, like her, she just doesn't get it, man.
This was my favorite line in this scene is Ryan slide tackles Luke and the coach blows the whistle and he yells, illegal!
That is a good line. The coach follows the fucking rules. Don't you dare do something illegal. You'll get called out.
I don't play soccer. I don't know how... I kind of know how the rules work.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure when you blow the whistle for a slide tackle, you don't yell, illegal!
No, that's what they do. That's how soccer works. All the refs. Blow the whistle. Illegal. Red card.
They have cards for that.
Yeah, and they don't even have to say anything. They just throw the card up and then jot down the player that got the card.
That's what they write down in their notebook. Illegal.
Sorry. That was illegal. So, yeah. Then we cut to the Cohen's house for dinner, and it is a quiet dinner. Now, obviously, Sandy and Kirsten are kind of at odds with each other at this point, so they're very silent. You know, Ryan's dealing with the shit with Marissa and Luke.
He just did a very illegal slide tackle.
Illegal. It was a clean tackle, okay. I think he defends himself later with that.
He does.
And Seth is like the only one who's talking. Now, again, he is not aware... He cannot read the room. He's having a hard...
Also, Seth has had a great day.
Seth
has got
in heaven.
Two beautiful women fighting over him at this point.
Right.
And
so he's trying to talk to everybody, and everybody's just like, not having it. So it's a quiet dinner at the Cohen's house. Sad. And then we cut to the pool house, and Ryan's in there studying. And
oh, I just... Yeah. Real quick, though, I did want it... So He asked Ryan something about how soccer. Ryan shoots him a look.
Yeah.
He's like, ugh. And then to Sandy, he's like, how's the new job? Sandy gives him a look.
Yeah.
And then, oh man, I forget what he asks Kirsten.
Does he even ask her anything? Is he just like, Kirsten, how's a... And then she just like shoots him a look before he can even ask a question.
But yeah, but there's something about her. And maybe, again, this is, you know, she's not... When I think of funny characters on the show, she's not up near the top of the list. So I think it's like when she, again, this is, you know, comedy in threes. It's like when you get your third, like,
yeah,
shut the fuck up look, and it's from her. It was very funny. I mean,
she just like stare at Ryan and pour a glass of wine or something.
Well, he like doesn't even finish his sentence. Cause he's like, well, mom, how is that? Okay. And I think he says, like, I will just eat in silence or something like that.
Yeah, that was... I mean, it wasn't much of a scene, but it was... They did something with it.
I liked it.
Then we go to the pool house with Ryan studying, and Marissa comes over.
Artsy shot in the reflection of the glass of the pool house door.
Mm, yes.
She, like... stands there and looks at him for a second.
Mm. There were a few good shots in this episode. She walks in and she asks, you know, why did you tackle Luke?
What she should have said was slick fucking slide tackle, bruh.
Yeah.
That was
textbook.
Rad. Yeah. You fucking took him out.
Gnarly. But no, she's just there to kind of like figure out like why are you being mean to my ex-boyfriend who cheated on me and that I'm now like pals with? Why would you do that? Even though we're trying to currently date each other.
Yeah. Do you need to ask this line of questions?
No. I think you can
answer. You can answer all of these questions on your own. You don't need him to fucking rebuttal anything.
Well, like, Ryan answers her question with another question. Why did you lie to me? Because I heard everything. And then Marissa's like, that was none of your business. Like, me and Luke talking to each other. And then Ryan's like, yeah, I guess not. I guess this isn't going to work out. And then Marissa's like, yeah, I guess it's not going to work. And then she leaves. So they're basically saying, like, we can't be together because this shit just keeps happening. We keep going in circles and like not communicating with each other, not being truthful with each other, slide tackling, you know, ex-boyfriends. It's just not happening. It's not going to work out. So they're both kind of like frustrated.
I want Ryan to slide tackle every other love interest that Marissa has for the rest of the show. Like when Oliver shows up and he's like, hi, I'm Oliver and my family's rich, but you never see them and you don't know where. And Ryan's just like, fuck you, slide tackles him.
He like finds out that he can slide tackle and he doesn't like go to jail or get like expelled from school. He's like, as long as I'm slide tackling people, it seems to be okay. If I punch people,
if I punch, I'm done.
But slide tackling, I can get away with that. That would be so great. That's like a special move in the comic book. It's like Kid Chino with the slide tackle.
Kid Chino slide tackling everybody.
If there was like a fighting game of like OC characters, that would definitely be like his like down B. He would like do the slide tackle.
If anybody listening designs video games, please.
We've got one for you.
Please make this game for us.
We've got a pitch. So we go to commercial there. Then we come to open up on the pool house the next morning with Sandy and Ryan. Sandy, what's up? Is this the scene? This is the scene.
So Sandy's there.
Yeah.
Just the day before, Seth was there.
Mm-hmm.
Same seat, coffee, newspaper.
Oh.
Ryan walks out of the bathroom. It's a bit of a stretch, but at this point, we have not had one to this point.
Would we call that a callback?
I want to call it a callback.
See, I didn't read it as a. I didn't read it as.
Well, it's something.
It's like a visual.
There is something. There's something to this.
I agree. Yeah, it's. I would see that as like Seth trying to imitate Sandy a little, maybe, because he's like, I've got my morning routine, I drink coffee and I read Arts and Leisure. Like he's trying to assume this, like, this is what grown-ups do, this is, you know.
Right.
And I feel like maybe Sandy being there the next morning kind of like harkens to like, oh, Seth is just trying to be more like his dad, maybe. I don't know. That's a good observation, right, though.
Well, there's more callbacks in the.
We
up,
don't so worry. Yeah, we don't have a spoiler, ton. But we have some spoiler callbacks alert coming up. So
also, what I was reading about this scene is, you know, Sandy and Kirsten are kind of fighting,
yeah.
And so, and also Sandy heard from Ryan's soccer coach. Illegal! He called him. Your son did an illegal.
Yeah.
You need to talk to him.
You're a lawyer, right? You know about illegal.
So Sandy was like, I'm going to, rather than like hang out in a room with my wife right now, who is very mad at me, I'm going to go hang out in the pool house with Ryan.
He's prioritizing. And, yeah. Right.
And I'm going to give him like, we'll get to it, but this is a scene where I teared up.
Oh, I think I did too. I drew a little crying emoji face. That's how I knew it got to me. So Sandy's like, your coach called. You're suspended for 2 games. He says you're talented, but your attitude sucks. Which is really just like how you paraphrase Ryan Atwood. It's like he's a genius.
The test scores.
Yeah, exactly. But your attitude's in the gutter. and then Ryan's just like, yeah, my attitude does suck. And Sandy's like, forget getting suspended. Forget the suspension. We are like one mistake away from losing you, which is like so sad and so true. And Sandy like doesn't want it. He's like, I love you. You know, like I've come to see you as my son. And if
can you imagine, I mean, not, can you imagine though, like we don't have kids. I don't think we're not going to have kids anytime soon, but just the idea of having a kid seems terrifying. But also if you like adopted a kid, but they were like, but if he fucks up, we'll take that kid away from you.
Yeah, man. Like,
that's just like an extra thing of like, oh my God, the like stress of being a parent to this kid.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So, and yeah, Sandy's like, I don't care about like you getting suspended for two games. He's just like, don't lose your head and do something rash, because then you wouldn't be we wouldn't be able to, you know, have you as our son anymore. And then he says, this is the line that made me cry. He's like, Seth was never really into sports, and I'd love to go to your games. Like, I'd love to watch you play. And I'm just like, oh my God, dude. Just that like idea of him like wanting to cheer him on, like, you know.
I pictured Ryan, whose dad has been in jail or been shitty to him his whole
also
life.
He's been Hercules.
Ryan like playing soccer, Sandy Cohen's like in the stands cheering him on.
Yeah,
like we never see that. It's never a thing.
No.
But if it was, it would be like a scene in Friday Night Lights, and I would just weep.
Yeah.
I would just cry so much if Sandy was like, Ryan scores the goal, and Sandy's like, that's my son!
Oh, my just, God.
Oh, my God, the waterfall.
And Ryan, like, looks up at him in the stands, and they gives him, like, a fist pump or something. Oh, it'd be amazing. I would love it.
Oh, I'm crying now.
Come on, Schwartz. Give me that.
Bring back the OC.
We all want it.
Season 5.
But yeah, just the fact that he's so supportive, and that, you know, like, you know that he meant that when he said it. You know that, like,
yeah,
Sandy Cohen would fucking be there early to get a good seat, like, for Ryan's soccer game.
Oh, yeah.
I don't care if he's got a big case the next day. Like, he's like, this is my son's soccer game. It's the championship.
He's there.
I'm gonna
be
there.
He's learned, like, all the rules about soccer.
Oh, yeah. He's, like, yelling at the refs and everything.
Oh, absolutely.
What are you doing?
Oh, I love it. This should have been an episode.
I agree. Let's just, yeah. We don't need.
The episode's called The Soccer.
Yeah, if we could just drop like a Donnie episode or whatever and pick up just one where Ryan plays his first soccer game, and Sandy has to like rush. He's like, you know, in court, and it's getting held up or whatever, and he's like, I gotta be there. It's Ryan's first game or whatever, you know.
And Rachel's like, you gotta choose between this case or sex with your wife or Ryan's soccer game. And Sandy's that's not even a choice. And he just fucking runs out the room.
He throws his briefcase down and takes his tie off and just like runs out there.
And then, because it's like what happens in sports movies, you know, time is winding down, and Luke is the one who passes it to Ryan.
Yeah.
And he scores.
Yeah.
And Luke is like, hey, I don't like you, but I respect you.
See, you can do so much, so much relationship building through like one soccer game. Come on, Schwartz.
That's why sports movies are good, and that's why, like, there's not that many good sports movies.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of them fuck up in different places.
Yeah.
But it's like, all of it's there to be good, so that when it is good, it's fucking great.
I mean, that's why sports are good, because it's like real life. It's like you're seeing these stories unfold like in real time, and you don't know what's going to happen. It's cool. I miss sports.
Sports coming back in a month or two.
Sometime. Yeah, we'll see. So then we cut to the school exterior. We're outside the school, and we're with Seth and Ryan. And Ryan's like, I messed up with Marissa. It's like I screwed everything up. I don't think it's going to happen anymore. Seth's like, just apologize to her. Like, even if you didn't do anything wrong, you'll get your shoes peed in way less. That's a metaphor. No, it's not, Seth. It's a callback.
That's a callback.
And that's what they call a callback in comedy, Ryan.
Mark it.
Cool. That's our first callback of the episode, and it came way too late, if you ask me. So then we cut to another. We're still outside the school, but we're now with Marissa and Summer.
No, wait. I gotta, there was something about this scene. After he says that, he's like, you know, you should always apologize even if you weren't wrong. And when your shoes get peed in much less. And then Ryan goes to Luke, and then Seth goes, and as he's saying this whole time, he hasn't looked like he's been looking straight ahead, like he hasn't looked at Ryan.
Yeah.
And when Ryan goes to Luke, Seth like walks ahead of him, and he goes, that crybaby? Nah, man, he gets to drown in his own tears. And there was something about that, just the way he delivered all of that, by just like looking off ahead and like walking away from Ryan, but still talking to Ryan. I loved it. I don't know why. Like, I don't know what it.
I read
why
it as
he did it or anything. It was just such a like a choice that he made, and I loved it so much.
I read this as like Seth, like, kind of like leaning, like trying to be the cool guy. Like pretend, like hamming it up in like a very sort of like a character in a movie or something would do, where it's just like, I'm just gonna look ahead the whole time and be like, nah, man, that crybaby could drown in his own tears. Like, say something really cool and walk off.
Was it because like he's been hanging out with Anna, and so he's like, I give advice now because Anna gives advice.
Yeah, he's got the confidence that Anna gives him by just like, you know, boosting him up, maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
It was so. It just struck me because it was very different from any other scene that those two have had together. And yeah. I liked it.
It was almost
cool.
A flip where Seth's now like the confident one, and Ryan's the insecure one. It's like they did a flip flop on that one. Yeah, that was cool. Again, just like Adam Brody making choices that I'm down with. So then we go to Marissa and Summer outside the school, and Summer's like, well, it's too bad, you know, referring to her and Ryan, not Marissa and Ryan not being able to get together or whatever, them deciding like, oh, it's not going to happen. She's like, too bad, because I could tell you really liked him. And Marissa like can't compute that. She's just kind of like, what? You knew I really liked him? Like, I don't know what she...
How could you tell?
Yeah, I don't know what she was trying to... Or why she might have been embarrassed by that. It's like, it's okay to like him. He's a good-looking guy. And he's, like, very... He's usually pretty cool and understanding when he's not slide-tackling your ex-boyfriend.
Also, Summer is your best friend.
Yeah.
And...
It's okay, you know, to confide in her. She's your best friend. But I think Marissa's never like really said out loud that she like, and it's still probably like maybe like a status thing, because Ryan's still like the kid from Chino.
Yeah.
In the eyes of some of these people. And it's like sort of like uncouth for Marissa to be into that guy. I don't know. But yeah, you would think she'd at least be able to tell Summer, her best friend, that she's into him. So then Ryan enters the scene, and he asks Marissa, if we can talk, can we? And Summer's like, we got to get to class. And again, just like jumping in Marissa's defense, Marissa not speaking for herself or making any sort of decision for herself. Summer just kind of like grabbing her hand and pulling her along.
Yeah. Again, I love Summer for doing that, because in her mind, of course, what we know as like the omniscient, you know,
viewer,
narrator, yeah, sort of watching this whole thing, we're like, no, let him talk. But Summer doesn't know that. She's defending her friend. Yeah, she's defusing everything.
Very protective.
She's running interference. And so, and also her friend can be very, you know, insecure and not sure of herself. So she's like, no, we got to go. Let's go.
Yeah. I'm just going to nip this in the bud, get my girl out of here. But, yeah, you know, as they're walking away, of course, Marissa looks back. Looks at Ryan and get a look.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get a little time passage.
She goes, meet me on the Ferris wheel. It's like, I don't do heights,
but I'll do them for you. So we get a little time lapse where we see, you know, like the sun setting, birds flying, the beach, and it's all set.
What about those seals? What happened to those seals?
I know. I want those seals. Those are morning seals. They only show up in the morning. Sun goes down, those seals are in the water.
Sleeping.
Yeah. So this is all set to Don't Give Up on Me by Solomon Burke, which I believe, is this the song that Sandy sings in
this
like season
Sandy
2?
This is Sandy and Kirsten's song.
This is their song, Don't Give Up on Me by Solomon Burke. Beautiful song. Great,
yeah,
song.
It's such a good song.
Yeah. And it fits so well in this moment. And it's so like, it's like when a song like lines up perfectly with what the characters are going through, because they're like struggling right now, like they're at odds with each other, but they, you know, don't give up on me. Like they're still like, I still love you, and we're gonna get through this. But so
I was wondering if it's because I'm a single person. Maybe you can you're married, Mitchell. Like the idea of having a song that's like, this is our song, but if it's also a song that's basically the perfect song for if you're in a fight, because it's like, don't give up on me, baby.
I know I done like, did you wrong.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
And then like you throw that on, if you've been fighting, you're like, I can't stay mad at you. I love you, baby.
I feel like, yeah, it's not even really like, this is our song because this is what we like. I don't know. That song does have like a very sweet sentiment to it, but it's also kind of like a plead for like, it's like saying like, I know I'm a fuck up, but like, come on, I really love you and I can do better. It's that kind of song. It's an interesting song to be like your song. It's not like a pure love song. It's a very kind of like realistic view on relationships.
It reveals the flaw of humanity.
Yeah.
It's the, I'm not perfect and I'm sorry.
Which
and
is,
I still love you.
Yeah. Which is like maybe the realest song a couple can have, which is why like Sandy and Kirsten are such a strong couple, because they like, they keep it real, man. They like, they're not trying to have this like perfect marriage like Julie and Jimmy were, where it just kind of all like crumbles. It's like a very weak facade, but one that like kind of looks good from the outside. It's like, nah, Sandy, right, and Kirsten are they're in it to win it, man.
Yeah, they don't really seem to give a shit about what, I mean, I guess they kind of do, because the whole like news article thing about hubby attorney and
yeah, but that whatever was more about,
but like they,
Caleb,
they
not
truly
finding
do
out.
They're basically like, fuck it, we love each other. Let's, you know, I'm sorry, let's fix this kind of thing. Like they do want to like get things back to the way they were, kind of thing. And
yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
and that's what
I'm. The song, it like I wish I'd written down, because there's one part where he's singing and he's like, I can't remember the exact line, but he's like, everything, everything, everything. It's fucking amazing. Oh, it's a really good song. I liked it a lot.
I did too. So we cut to Kirsten's in the hot tub, which I think is like the first time we've seen either of them in the pool.
I wrote that down.
Yeah.
This is the first time, and I think the only time we ever see her or Sandy in the pool or hot tub.
Yeah, and she's listening to this song because Sandy mm-hmm. comes in, he has flowers for her, and he says, "I love Mr. Solomon Burke." So it's that thing where it starts out and you think it's non-diegetic, you think it's just music in the background, but then it ends up being in the actual scene. The characters can hear it. So Sandy's...
We'll talk about in, I think it's season two, it's their anniversary, and Sandy sings this song.
Yes.
And the whole time I was watching it, I was like, is Peter Gallagher really singing this? I wanted it to be him really singing it, but I couldn't tell.
I think he may
if
have...
If he was lip syncing or not.
I think Peter Gallagher may have actually recorded his vocal singing that song, but that was definitely like a pre-recorded track. Like he was lip syncing to
right.
whatever it was. But
was it him?
I think it may.
I want it to be him.
I want him to do
everything.
We'll look into it when we get there. So Sandy comes in, gives her flowers. He says, he's going to take the case. And he's just like, it's who you married. Like, I'm not going to stop being me. This is me. I'm the guy who fights for the little guy, fight for the wetlands. And Kirsten's like, it's going to be a long year, but we'll get through it. And then they make out, and it's great.
There, I put in all capital letters, they're going to fuck in the hot tub.
Well, yeah, because Sandy's like, you getting out? And then Kirsten's like, you getting in? Hot tub.
It's building. Kirsten is basically like, Sandy's like, I'm taking the case. And Kirsten is like, I know.
Yeah, she knew.
Like, she knows her husband can't not do this case. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just who he is
as
a person.
Yeah.
And that's why she loves him. And that's why, we're going to see in the next couple episodes, this is going to be a thing. But they're doing it.
Yeah.
Because, they both have their personal interests, but they also are both madly in love with each other, and they are about to fuck in this hot tub.
But
and
then
I want to see it.
But then, it's
Caleb calls
fucking Caleb.
Caleb calls Kirsten.
Rachel calls Sandy,
and I believe that this is a phone call. Callback.
And that's what they call a callback in comedy, Ron.
Okay. Mark it. I'll give it
Mark
to you.
Mark it!
Phone call callback. That's weird that, they're like the only people that call them. So then,
right before
I know.
Intercourse.
Every time. It's almost like they can tell. They get like their ears.
Which, it's weird for Rachel because that's Sandy's female... co-worker. It's weirder for Caleb because that's Kirsten's dad.
Yeah, she has to be like, oh, okay, I gotta get out of like horny mode and get into like daughter mode.
He's like, hey Kiki, what are you doing? She's like, honestly, I was about to fuck my husband in our hot tub. And he's like, ew, that's disgusting.
No time for that.
We need to look at some charts or some shit.
Yeah.
How we're going to destroy this rainforest.
I'm not satisfied with how evil I am lately. Gotta be worse. So that sucks. We didn't get to see them bang. But it is network TV, folks, so that probably wasn't going to happen anyway. And then we cut to the kickoff carnival, finally. Here we are. Big event of this episode. And it is a really nice carnival. They got games. They got
super nice
big
carnival.
Old Ferris wheel. We start with Seth and Anna. They're at the skee ball. And Seth thinks he's really good at skee ball. And then Anna picks up a ball, rolls it, and lands it in one of those like corner pockets, like 100,000.
The top corner one.
The like impossible roll. And And this is another Seth Cohen joke that doesn't quite age well, because Anna displays that she's good at this game, skee ball. And Seth's response to that is, clearly you're a lesbian. Which,
I put, oof.
Oof.
2003 joke.
Yeah. Assuming that lesbians are good at skee ball? Assuming that lesbians are good at, what, carnival games?
Well, what is the assumption here? I said, and I hope this doesn't out me as... Here's all I was trying to do was figuring out why is that a joke?
Yeah.
And why is that a joke that he made? And I assume because she's rolling a skee ball like underhand.
Okay.
Is like a softball. Like
okay.
How you pitch softball.
That's like a stereotype, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of lesbians that they
and
play
so
softball.
That's what I came up with. And again, this is us. It also sucks that we feel like we have to defend this as if we wrote it, which we didn't.
No. I'm not.
This was
I'm not
a
trying
show
to defend
from
it.
17 years ago.
Yeah,
but
I think it's a bad joke, and I think it's in poor taste. I'm just trying to understand where it came from, because that's
underhand rolling. Softball, athletic.
Okay.
Clearly, you're a lesbian. That's the joke.
Because
that
you're not like
decided to make.
You're not like a Marissa who just doesn't do anything. You're just she's like social chair. Like you don't do typically feminine activities. You're doing something that I don't know. Skee ball's for everybody. I don't know. This one, not great, so.
It's a bummer, but again, that's one that, that joke gets made in 2003. Clearly, we know more now about everything. We're smarter about things now. But, back then... What do we think of that joke? I think that's another one that even back then we just go okay, haha, next joke, whatever. That wasn't that funny.
Yeah.
That wasn't that clever.
Yeah.
Because it really isn't. It's not that clever of a joke.
Not at all, no. No, you're right. And now we hear it and we're just Jesus, dude. fucking do better. be better.
So, athletic women are all lesbians? What is this? What's happening?
I don't know what he's getting at, but I don't like it.
He's not getting the MVP this episode.
Sorry, Seth. No, you are not.
Sorry, man.
You are too dumb in this episode. So, Ryan enters after the terrible joke, and then Seth exits because he's I got tickets. I'm going to go get a prize.
Yeah. This scene... I love.
Yeah, with Ryan and Anna.
This is such a good scene.
Yeah, they talk to each other on a very real level and stuff. And
well, I was trying to remember the last time there was just a Ryan and Anna scene, and it's when we kind of first meet Anna, and they're at the cotillion dance practice thing.
Right.
You know, and Anna's basically, sees Ryan looking over at Marissa, and he's like, do you like her? And he's like, I don't know. And she's like, you're in trouble. And, they're basically, they don't bullshit each other. They give each other kind of, pretty good advice. And in this one, it's Ryan giving really good advice to Anna.
Yeah.
Of, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah,
what
totally.
Do you want?
Totally, totally. Ryan's to Anna, he's like, why are you helping him, with this whole summer thing. And then Anna says, well, he sees me as a friend. And Ryan's like, are you going to let that slide? Cause Ryan can tell. He's like, I know you like Seth. You know, I'm not an idiot. Seth is an idiot. He can't tell, but I can tell.
Ryan's like, that's my brother.
And then, Ryan says, You know guys want to be chased by girls who aren't interested in them.
And that's what they call a callback in comedy, Ron.
Mark it, because that's a callback.
Callback, mark it!
So yeah, he's kind of like giving her her own advice back to her. Even though he didn't hear her
give
that advice.
Yeah, and then we see Marissa and Summer go towards the Ferris wheel.
Yeah.
And Anna goes, so do girls.
So do girls, yep. And then Ryan's like, all right, say no more, fam. Watch me go. And he just goes after Marissa. He, on his way there, he runs into Luke.
Again, another scene of Luke going like, I'm sorry, I'm just in the way. I know that's you didn't want to see me.
Yeah.
Ryan's like, get the fuck out of my fucking way.
I gotta go make out with your girlfriend.
I will slide tackle the fuck out of you right now.
Yeah, you want to break another ankle? He didn't break his ankle. He's fine. He's certainly not feeling that gunshot wound anymore. Man, Luke gets beat up a lot. So they both see Marissa, and Ryan goes after her, and Luke just stands there. He's just kind of like, lets Ryan go after
her. Luke lets him by.
Yeah, which I feel like was a big character development moment for him.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, he has to, clearly with everything that's happened this episode, I mean, he cried in front of her, and she was basically like, you cheated on me. And if I hadn't caught you, I wouldn't know, but I did. So go fuck yourself.
Yep.
And we're done.
Yep.
And it's basically, it's kind of closure on that relationship. So it's good for Luke to move on, you know, and let Ryan go by.
Mm-hmm.
He's the better man. And yeah.
Yeah.
It was a good moment for Luke. We will see better moments for Luke.
Oh, definitely.
In the future.
Oh, certainly. He has an upward trajectory from here on. So Ryan jumps the line again, like he did at soccer practice. and he kind of like grabs Summer by the arm. And he's like, do you mind if I like sit with Marissa on the Ferris wheel? And Summer's just like, I'm not getting involved. And then she like kind of goes away. And then Ryan just kind of like sneaks in and like jumps on the Ferris wheel with Marissa and like closes the little latch. They kind of like traps her with him a little bit.
Well, knowing what we find out right now about Ryan and Ferris wheels and heights.
Yeah.
It is this thing of like him taking a risk of like, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
I'm going to get on this Ferris wheel with her.
He's facing his fear.
Because what we soon find out is he is so afraid of heights.
So afraid of heights. And the way he expresses his fear is very interesting.
It's amazing. I love it so much.
Yeah. So he's, he gets on there and he's like, I want to talk. It's important. And then Marissa's like, aren't you afraid of heights? And he's like, yes. Yes, I am. And the Ferris wheel starts to go around. They get to the top and then it stops. And Ryan's like, what the fuck's going on? And
he's freaking out.
We cut to ground level and Anna is paying the Ferris wheel operator like $10. And she's like, keep them up there a minute. They got some stuff to talk about. I'm like, what a...
This whole thing is so great.
Yeah.
I love it so much.
I completely agree. Like, such a bro move from Anna, but also, like, Ryan's up there freaking out. I don't think Anna knew that Ryan was afraid of heights.
No!
So...
Never.
She's like, I'm doing him a favor. And he's just like, oh, fuck. But...
She's like, he's gonna fucking thank me later.
Yeah, which, you know, he will. Because of what happens. So we're down there with Anna. Seth enters. And Anna goes, Seth, I got to tell you something. And then she plants this big smooch on him. Big old kiss.
Seth goes, so after Anna gives the guy the $10 that Ferris wheel operator says, keep him up there a little while. They're walking off and Seth goes, you are the master. Again, like that's Seth is like, this is my buddy.
Yeah.
I love her. She's the fucking coolest.
She's the best, but man.
We don't like make out or anything. And she's like, hold on.
Yeah.
And then they do make out.
Yeah. And then, after she plants this big old smooch on him, Seth looks over and he sees Summer. And he's like, is this all, like to Anna, he's like, is this all part of the plan for like me to get Summer? And I'm like, oh my God, Seth, you fucking idiot. Like, and Anna's just like, yeah. And it's like, such a bummer. Because I'm like,
how fucking sad, bro, for her, man. Yeah.
But then, and then Seth gives her this like little sock monkey prize. And he's like, it's all I could get with my tickets. But he gave it to Anna, not Summer.
It's, yeah, because she's like, go to her. And he's like, okay. And he runs off. And she's just kind of has this moment of like, I tried, you know, I made the move. And then he comes back and he's like, hey, here. And he goes to the sock monkey puppet thing. And he's like, this is all I could get with my tickets.
Yeah.
And it's sweet that he did that for her. And, but then he goes to Summer and it really like the next couple of episodes, this is their like three, like love triangle kind of three way that like, fuels the OC, and I get it, but it bums me out because I'm like,
yeah,
somebody gets left out, and I hate that.
Yeah,
and
it's a no win situation.
Yeah.
So then, yeah, he goes over to talk to Summer, and he's like trying to be a cool guy, trying to be the confident guy. He like grabs a little bit of her cotton candy and eats it, which could be a funnel cake. Could have been a funnel cake, guys.
Could have been a funnel cake.
Summer's like, well, I'm looking for somebody to go on the Tilt-A-Whirl with.
So he does walk up before he even grabs the cotton candy from her. He goes, hey, Summer. And he like wipes at his lips with his hand.
Mm-hmm.
As if to be like, sorry, I was just
making out with Anna.
Somebody. Yeah, because she saw it.
Right.
He saw her see it.
Yeah.
So he's just like, oh, hey.
That's got to be confusing for Summer. Because she sees that and she's like, okay, I guess he's with Anna and she's bummed. But now he's like coming over to talk to me. Why? It's strange. So, yeah. Summer's looking for somebody to go on the Tilt-A-Whirl with her. She may vomit. And Seth's like, I like those odds. And then they, I guess, go off to the Tilt-A-Whirl together.
Seth Cohen is the he's the human embodiment of the Grammy Award-winning song Smooth by Rob Thomas and Santana. This whole scene, he's being like so out of character.
Yeah.
And just like, oh, hey, what's up, Summer?
Yeah.
Grab some of her cotton candy. Yeah, I'll ride the Tilt-A-Whirl with you. I might throw up. I like those odds. And then he goes, and you're like, what the fuck just happened?
It's like actual smoothness to it. It's not like Spider-Man 3 where Peter Parker thinks he's being cool, but is actually like being a complete dweeb and everybody's like laughing at him. But it's like legit Seth Cohen is being like a cool dude. Like,
yeah, just like, for the first time ever.
It's like when... it's like Nutty Professor or something. It's like, I don't know. So then we cut to the we cut back to the Ferris wheel with Marissa and Ryan, and Ryan's like tripping. Like he's like, he like won't open his eyes and he's just like breathing heavy.
He eyes closed. At one point he goes, what kind of carnival is this, Cooper? Like it is. We've never seen Ryan like this before.
He goes through a range of emotions, yeah.
He gives this very like heartfelt speech, but the whole time his eyes are closed. He's looking towards Marissa, but he's like, he can't
open his eyes.
Like, dude, it's the best. Like, just seeing him, like, so out of his element.
Yeah.
And seeing, like, the thing that he's afraid of. And then he's like, fuck it. I'm gonna, you know, conquer my fear.
Yeah.
Because of this girl. And, like, it pays off. Because they kiss.
Oh, yeah.
Their first kiss.
So, yeah. It's a big one.
Before, it's a big, beautiful kiss on the top of the Ferris wheel.
Before they kiss, Ryan's like, he's like, you know, closed eyes, everything. He's like, look, I don't talk about stuff, and I have a hard time trusting people, but I trust you, and I want to make this work. And like, that's all he had to say. And that makes, like, that all checks out. Like, his whole, like, kind of like feeling like weird about her and Luke, and like, you know, like her not telling him the truth about her and Luke and stuff, and like the fact that, like, you know, like his mom abandoned him, and like he's just had nothing but, like, he's built nothing but distrust of people his entire life because everybody's just let him down his whole life. And so, yeah. But for whatever reason, when he's with Marissa, he feels like safe and he feels comfortable and he trusts her. And that's
enough to go up in a Ferris wheel and, like,
yeah, and that's
be up high, which, dude, I'm trying to think of if there's a, I'm sure there's better Ryan scenes, but, like, this is probably, like, for me, like, top five Ryan scenes.
Yeah. Just seeing him vulnerable and scared is something you don't normally see out of him. And he plays it really well. Like, he acts.
It's funny.
He acts it very well.
It's super funny.
So he's like, I want to make this work. And then he's like, if we ever get down. And he's still, like, just, like, freaking out. And then Marissa says, maybe you need something to take your mind off it. And then, boom, fucking fireworks. Big kiss.
Hand job.
The kiss we've been waiting for since episode one. You know? Ryan and Marissa. It's happening, people. And
it took 9 episodes, but here we are.
We finally made it. So they're kissing. We get this nice, like, pull-out wide shot set to the song Point the Silence by the band South, which is, like, a nice little number. Not one of their songs, but maybe it is now. Who knows? They've got a lot of songs.
I put, I looked that up, too, and I was like, never heard of this song, but it's a really good OC song.
Oh, yeah.
There's, like, certain songs that, like, work well in the show, and they're, like, very much of the vibe this show is.
Yeah.
And I feel like in season 2, they might have had more of a budget for, like, bigger
yeah.
names and whatever. But, like, season 1, they seemed like they did have to do some searching for mm-hmm. these songs, and for the most part, they got the right songs for the right scenes, and
yeah.
this one I definitely thought was one of those.
I agree, yeah. And then I like the Ferris wheel picks back up, and they get to the bottom, and then the operator is like, "All right, time to get out." And then Ryan's just like, "One more time."
one more time.
It back up, and they start to go back up, and they just keep making out the whole time. It's beautiful. And then we go to credits, man, and we're out. Season 1, episode 9. There we go.
Fucking great episode.
Yeah, terrific episode. Another
Do you
one.
Have a favorite so far? The first 9 episodes? I'm putting you on the spot, but
I mean, I think the pilot episode's still, like, the absolute strongest, and it might be the strongest episode of this whole series,
whole show.
But
I think this is
a really good one. This might be number two.
The last three have been really, they all work well together.
Yeah,
and yeah, it's just building this foundation for this show that we decided to make a podcast about, because it's episodes like this that make it easy for us to talk about for over 3 hours.
Oh yeah. And I think that's how you got to kind of, like, watch this show. You got to watch it in these little chunks like this, Like, I learned when I was, like, going to watch this show, the app I was using said all of the original air dates of each episode. And there was a break after the Tijuana episode. There was, like a month-long break or something. And it was, like, in, like, September, October, I think. So, probably because of sports or whatever. But that's why we got the really long recap coming back into episode 8. Makes a lot of sense. But they took, like, periodic breaks like that. They would take, like, a couple weeks off here, a month off there. I think the next break that we have is the New Year's Eve episode, maybe. And then they'd take, like a month off and come back. So, yeah.
There's over 20 episodes in season 1.
Yeah, it's like 25 or something.
That seems insane to us now.
For an hour
because
long.
Because we're just used to like 10 episodes and that's a season.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
And it's crazy how TV, you know, there's lots of different things factor into that or whatever. But yeah, it is. That's how TV used to be back then.
They crank them out.
We're all just like, yeah, that's TV.
Yeah. It was more of a, yeah, more of a machine, I guess, back then. They were just churning stuff out.
Also, fucking good for us for guessing that that's what happened.
Yeah. I mean, there's no way we could have known because we just watched the DVDs when we started watching the show. But just like, I just remember that Tijuana episode, like feeling like such like a, you know, like end of a chapter sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Like it felt very conclusive. And then it really just tipped me off when we watched the next episode, episode 8, where they did the like super long recap of like the whole series. I was like, that's kind of odd. And I'm like, there had to have been a break there. And sure enough, there was. So MVP, who do you got?
So I was going to say, just because how much I loved, and I think he's gotten to the last two episodes in a row, but how much I loved Ryan on the Ferris wheel. I said, we give it to him, or my second is Anna because my heart melts for Anna. But you said Jimmy, I would give it to either of those three unless you have another person to recommend.
I mean, it'd be hard to give it to Jimmy just because he was really only in like two scenes and one of them he burnt fucking toast.
He gets the Oscar for best supporting actor.
Yeah, he gets an honorable mention, I would say. But I will cast my ballot for Anna, I think, because she really, I mean, she was really like, even if like it got kind of like messed up at the end there where she was like, you know, really, really trying to convey her feelings towards Seth. Like, her intentions have always been about helping Seth. And she's just like, whoever she's talking to, she's nothing but like helpful towards. Like, even when she's talking to Ryan or whatever. And she like kind of bites back a little bit at Summer and like puts her in her place a little bit. And I appreciate that. So, yeah, I vote for Anna.
I love her.
She get it?
Okay. Anna's been in two episodes. She's gotten the MVP in both episodes.
Wow. She's
in the next like 8 or 9 episodes though. So I don't think we'll see.
We'll see.
I don't think she's going to get the MVP for every episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's 2 for 2 so far.
Yeah. She's great. All right, man. Well, guys, that wraps up episode 9, The Heights. Hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to get in touch with us, we're at jnmitchellstheocpodcast@gmail.com. I'm on Instagram at Mitchell Hardage, HARDAGE. Jay is at Jay the Instagram on Instagram. Yep. And I just hope you guys are still out there fighting the good fight, protesting, donating, learning, and doing what you can to help end police brutality against black people. Because that's a fucked up thing.
Yes.
That's still happening. And I feel like it's kind of lost a little momentum in the last week or so. But there's still people out there and there's still a lot we can do. So keep at it, guys.
Yeah, please. Keep at it. And yeah, donate, protest, do everything you can. And please, be good to yourself too. We're still quarantining.
Yeah.
You know, sucks. It's going on 3 months now, four months now.
Yeah, 3 months since
March. I have
March.
No idea how much time has gone by.
Too much, in my opinion, but we got to keep at it, man.
And so, yeah, we hope, this podcast is helping you in any way. And we're here for you.
Yeah.
To give you, super long explanations about this show. And we love you and we thank you so much for listening. And,
we will
until next,
you
until next time.
We'll see you later. Did I do it
Thanks,
right?
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Okay, love you. Bye.
Podcast is a Kitty Wing production.